Snake and Banter is brought to you by eSportsBet, the industry's leading crypto odds matrix. They are still running their World's Prediction Series 2 competition, a $10 million USDT prize pool competition that's free to enter on the website. They'll give you the DJT. You can even get additional DJT by logging in each day. And it has not only $10 million US dollars, but hundreds of thousands of dollars for the prizes to be won. Now, obviously, there's no CSGO going on at the top pro level, right? There were all the tournaments, but the competition runs throughout the rest of the year. And you can bet on all the other eSports games, League of Legends, you could bet on Dota 2, Rainbow Six, Fortnite, Valorant. You can pick whatever games out there in the games that you follow. And when CSGO comes back after the player break, I think player break ends on 14th of August, they'll be right there again with the World's Prediction Series 2 contest and all the bets you can make in CSGO. They have a very wide market. So if you already bet on esports or you're interested in betting on esports, consider eSportsBet because they sponsor Snake and Banter. Right here for another episode of Snake and Banter. For this one, my voice is wrecked. But if you know anything about me, it's not going to stop me talking, is it? Like, guess what? The idea it might be slightly annoying and you might want me to stop talking would stop me talking. Like, have you ever met me? Are you even aware who I am? First of all, I am eSports, so you're welcome. Enjoy the space. But, you know, and I should actually work and expand that out. It should be some sort of thing, my mistake, about how, you know, like in like Hindu philosophy, like essentially the universe is the body of God and like we're all just like part of it. I should do like a whole thing about how that's how like esports is to me, you know. So for example, in a solipsistic universe, Simple actually doesn't exist anymore because I blocked him. And also if you watch him in finals. Anyway, so Cassard is here for this episode. That's right, goats can catch straights too, mate. Don't even worry about that. Goats can catch straights, right? So we've got Cassard here is our guest, who is the... Wait, we'll do the good and the bad. We'll do the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good, he used to be the coach of that brilliant Renegades team that was at one point in time one of the best teams in the world. The bad, he was briefly the coach of that Cloud9 team that basically killed North American CS, as far as I can tell. And then the ugly is that he's like an analyst now, but then maybe one day he'll be a coach again. But no one really knows. You're just in like a, you're in like the middle ground at the moment where no one quite knows which pivot you're going to take.
Yeah, right? I'm just flying around between things. The truth is that I don't want to really jump into any kind of coaching roles that doesn't really fit me. I'm too old for that stuff, right?
Yes.
It's just I'm not 25 or 20 for that matter. Like, I gather enough experience that I can allow myself to pick where I want to go. So, you know,
if someone's watching this show who is a top team who potentially wants a coach, all I'll tell you is this. I get the vibe it's the same with you, Cassard, as it is with my mate Zeus. It's the same situation. Even though he says he's like retired from coaching, he told me, put it this way, for example, like last year at that Stockholm Major when everyone knew G2 was going to make a move, he was like, look, if they offered me like G2 and I have Nico, yeah, obviously I'll come back. Like, I get the feeling a lot of people are in that position now, which is like, it's not like this is football and we all just have to be managers and keep jobs for 40 years and take whatever offers available. If you've done it a few years, you only want to do it if it's like a good offer, like there's something extra to offer. It's not just to have a job, right?
Yeah, it's like, it's in sports, like let's say football, right? American football, whatever, right? In franchises, you have 30 good teams, right? 20 teams. In CS, how many of these tier one teams do you have? Like, let's say tier one orgs, right? They have partnerships with all these, you know, ESL Blast and whatever, right? So those teams, like how many of those are they? 10? 12?
Not many.
Right? Not many that can you accept, right? So either you go to some sort of like tier two, possibly, you know, coming out from nowhere like Gambit and trying to like hit the jackpot right there. But how many times is that going to happen, right? So, or you wait for the right opportunity and just, you know, go in, like, for example, G2 and Zeus, whatever, right?
Absolutely. Right, so obviously people will know when we do the good, the bad, the ugly, we always start with the guest. So, Cassard, what is the good that you're bringing to the show? What point do you like at the moment?
What is the good thing? I was looking at the CS in the past 6 months, and I've been in the desk for multiple events, and, you know, I'm watching a lot of CS, and right now you can see there is a lot of, like, pool of, like, good young talent that is, you know, showing, popping off, you know, right now at this very moment, right? And then there are the difference between now and back in 2014, 15, 16 and whatnot. These players are learning 10 times faster than any other players back at the time. Why? Because they're maybe more motivated, but they have more tools, softwares, all these kind of things that are like there for them to learn more quickly, while the older generations are kind of set in their ways. You know, you have an example of, let's say, Cold Zera, right? The guy who is who was a twice, you know, the best player in the world right now, right in 2016, 17, what was it? And he failed to adapt in the following years. He just kept his own style of play. He didn't adapt so much, and now he's in this weird spot where he's not even, you know, playing this tier one CS, even though he deserves it. If he adapted, you know, like the other kids in the new generation and the new wave of players did, he would still be in a top team. That's just one example. There is many more. But right now, this pool of players' talent, like especially in the regions like CIS, you know, they have so much talent, and the players who are learning so fast and so much faster than we did before.
There are just so many tools now, and I think the thing is that most of the coaches that do it kind of know what they're doing so that they can pass knowledge along really well. I just took a glance at the top 10 teams' average ages, and the youngest is MAUS, and they just got in with 21. Their average age is 21.9. I don't know if I really consider MAUS to be like a legit top team, even though the ranking says that right now.
No.
But I think that the real one is Cloud9. They're a top 10 team, and their average age is 22.5. And you have, I think what's cool about them is that you have Groove and Hobbit passing down tons of knowledge. You have so many, I mean, like you're saying, the CIS region, they have so many resources. It feels like the wealth of resources has only gotten bigger, and it's not like the old resources are disappearing by any means. So people can just keep taking in everything from the past, and now people are just training more efficiently, they're getting better so much faster, and that's why we're seeing people like Bit just hit the ground running in a way that I was kind of hard to imagine before.
And we are in a digital age right now. There is a lot more money, and like it's a different, like these parents of these kids are not, you know, the same parents that I had, right? And it's like they understand what it is to be a professional esports player. They are supporting those kids, you know, going through these practices every day, and they're sitting on the PC and everything. They are respecting their wishes there, and they're respecting their dreams. They understand that this is a legitimate thing. It's not like playing video games, just I leave that PC, go, you know, find a job or something. It's a legitimate thing, and it develops even more. So that's quite positive to see.
I would definitely say, I think the area where this is so obvious to me is if you just contrast the NA scenes, like Next Generation and every other part, like Europe and CIS region. Because basically, it's like I've told people, if you don't follow Valorant, you won't know this. But there is loads of NA talent. They just all went to Valorant, unfortunately. All the people who like almost made it, SOM, TenZ, those guys, they all went Wardell, they all went. Then there was the people who were like, maybe they would have come back to the top. They all just went there immediately. Some even went and came back, as people know. So like, the problem is, if we actually, the real tragedy is this, obviously going online sort of fucked up the hierarchy. You had all like people who had no LAN experience got to the top. People who had all the LAN experience, JW, Kenny S, dropped all the way to the bottom and never got to play anymore. So it's like we had this crazy turnover of all the talent. But the problem is, if you look at NA, it almost didn't happen. And then in Europe, it's an amazing turnover. Like, think how crazy it is in Europe, right, Kassad, that there is absolutely no top team who would have any interest in Guardian. But then you have players like that Patsy guy. Who the fuck even was this guy before, like last year? I've never even heard of this fucking guy. But you put him on a LAN and suddenly he's fragging out. Like, the Counter-Strike isn't the game we were following before the fucking ever went online, mate. It's a different world now.
I think it's like we kept like at the beginning it was like, oh, these guys onliners and everything. It's just how they play, right? This the CS changed from, well, at least right now changed from team plays, you know, team based, you know, kind of structure, right? That Astralis used to have, that old SK from Luminosity had, into this individualistic meta right now where people are just swinging, fragging, shooting, and they're all so sharp. Like we mentioned before, these kids are sharper by like three times than the players before, like in the generation of 2015, 14, and 16. And you combine that and you get your Patsies and, you know, your what is the Khaleesi guy from Spirit or whatever, like
Sure.
AWPers like Dexter and Shiro and, you know, all these new guys that are coming in at 20 years old, and it's like crazy, right? So right now I feel like Europe is in a good place. But you said, you know, so many players in NA are going to Valorant. How many of them are going to come back when they don't get a spot in the franchise leagues? That's
I
the
hope
real
they
question.
do. I hope so.
How many and what players? Like, are they going to be young ones, or are they going to be old ones that tried to go to the Valorant, didn't work out, they didn't get the spot, or they maybe they did, but they got kicked from their team, and now they're trying to get back into CS? I just hope that NA organizations who are doing things backwards for the past forever they don't take those players back and try to do things right. But I'm segueing on the ugly topic, but you know, we'll go back there. But the point is, you know, right now in NA, obviously the COVID, the online, the lack of tournaments didn't help at all. But, you know, I feel like the incompetence of most organizations helped tremendously throwing that region in the bin, basically.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that. Tom.
Yeah,
by the way, I actually thought a point that Monty made, Monte Cristo, obviously isn't like a big CSGO guy. He only came in for the Flashpoint stuff, but he's obviously aware of the wider industry. A point he made, by the way, actually when Valorant the game was announced, which was always a great point, and it actually is going to bear out soon, he always said the other way around, dude. You know, everyone in CS was scared, like, what if Valorant takes everything from CS? He was like, dude, it's the other way around. This is where, like, the League of Legends kids will learn, like, baby version CS, and then one day when they're like 3 years older, they'll be like, what the fuck, the CSGO, this is way better than Valorant, and they'll come over. And the reason why I bring that point up is because, you know, the whole rumor is there's going to be like CSGO 2 soon. That's the fucking moment it could happen, boys, if the timing is right and they announce the sort of franchise and stuff. And as you say, there's going to be sort of like 10 spots with a few side spots, but there's about 40 orgs in NA trying to get into those spots. So the ones that don't make it, if the players are good and they were people from CS, it's just logical that some of them should try. It's just a perfect time for them to come back in it. And we're all on land now. We're all on land.
From what I understand, there is 28 organizations that are paying salaries in NA to the Valorant teams. That's the information I got.
Their circuit is mental. If you don't know, this is how their circuit runs. You don't get to a LAN until you qualify to the international tournament, right? You play an online tournament, right? Which starts for everyone as a giant fucking open qualifier, basically, where you just play like cheaters, randoms, like fucking journalists and stuff. You just play anyone. You play everyone and God and their dog. And then eventually you get to the like portion where it's online, right? There's like whatever, I'm going to say like 8 teams, 16 teams or something. And in this portion, right, bro, 2 teams get out of all of NA and go to the LAN. And so what that means, by the way, is if you're like the best but then you finish third, you never even get to play a LAN, and you might even change roster. Like, oh mate, people don't know, there's another reason. You know, they always say it, like fucking Bobski said it years ago when he was in Astralis, when people used to give a fuck what he had to say. I remember him going like, I wish there was an LCS for CSGO. It's like, I'm in League of Legends, you idiot. It's terrible. You wouldn't want that. There'd be 10 teams, you idiot. You wouldn't be on one. What do you think about it? How would you, Bobski, ever have made it in Europe if there was 10 European teams and you weren't in one? Like, you wouldn't get signed in the showcase. When you did get signed, you got benched, you fuck. So that's the last thing you want. What you want is the opposite. You want a circuit, you force you in, like you did with Mad Lions or Gambit and these squads, you know.
Just contrast that with what Hooksy said on the last podcast episode, that it's actually too easy to make a major now. It's just so different. But I want to circle back to Kassad's point for one second about just the how there's so many resources now, and how things are like, not you can learn pretty fast now. Like, I didn't have like the most illustrious playing career, but I made Premier with about like 3,000 hours after having not touched the game basically since Source, essentially. So like, it's very doable if you just put your mind to it, to just get good pretty quickly in this game now. And so for people that do want to transfer over from Valorant, like, you just watch those Fallen videos, those Steel videos, and then the current content creators out there, like, you know, Alan and Hawke and Launders, like a lot of those guys or whatever, they're gonna have a lot of
they're all breaking down the cutting edge of the meta. Yeah, exactly. They're what's going on.
What? Plus the softwares that you have.
Even
right
inbox,
now.
Oh, everything, Gnosis, that's all mega
Skybox. You can learn so fast.
Crazy, these retake servers, this like being used like in a proper way, not just swinging around like crazy, creating. Yeah, yeah. You know, that's a weird thing, right? A lot of professional players are playing these retake servers thinking like, oh, I'm gonna practice there, but they just create so many bad habits. When an actually game is going on, he tries to swing the same way he did on the freaking retake server, and he gets bopped to the head instantly by a, you know, patsy from whatever team, right? Mm-hmm. And so. But again, there is a lot of good like software resources that you can use to improve much faster than players did in 2014, 15, 16, right?
For sure. Right, okay, Maui, what was your good point? Because what's funny is, this is where this show, our show is all about like nuance and distinction, because your point actually could be one of the bad points for someone else. But the way you phrased it is the key part. So go on, what is your good point?
Well, I'm just happy that G2 are finally making changes. I thought that they were a team that really could have, like, I didn't really have excuses for G2. When I looked at that roster versus Vitality, which I think are commonly compared as teams that are underperforming right now, Vitality's, I can see why they're not doing well. It's hard switching from all their native languages to English. But for G2, everybody on that team, I guess with the exception of Monacy, was speaking English right before. So then you just have to realize that this is not working in terms of roles, in terms of the play style. And so for them to let Alexi B explore options, and when I wrote this, actually, Jax wasn't in this kind of conversation, but now Jax can explore options too. And if you're just working with the core of Monacy, Nico, and Hunter, that is such an insane trio right there that you just find a slightly more... I guess a better fit role player, and whatever they do with the IGL role, I'm a little bit worried if Nico takes it, I will say, but I'm also, okay. I'm glad you say that, but if they, as long as they get an IGL and they just get a better support player, then I think that this roster has everything it needs in terms of firepower to be a top four team, but they just never really were a top four team, except for that opening Katowice tournament where it just feels like they overperformed for whatever reason.
The thing is, like, they, I would agree that the changes are necessary. They have been necessary not just now, they just 4 months ago, instantly. Yeah, like, even when they got Monacy, right? But the thing is, like, they need a CT anchor position, right? And they don't need like a classical role player or something. Like, they need a CT anchor. There, the Jax is playing the CT anchor there, and he's terrible at it. You know, he's not that type of player. That's not his natural instinct, and he's not supposed to be there, right? And you put a guy like that in a position like that, you cannot rely on that guy to do the job, right? That means that you need to pull additional help, additional rotations, additional utility, adjust your game on the way that you don't want to play, like opposite of what you actually want to do, just because one guy cannot keep, you know, on the numbers or whatever performance they need to be on that position. Right now, they need to, and he's past his prime. That guy's 29 years old, right? Or 30, yeah. 29, but let's say 29.
He's pretty old,
right?
Sure.
He is past his prime. He can be a good player in a some sort of French team, right? That he can put in his natural primary position as a T and as a CT and just, you know, do whatever he can do. We've seen miracles happen in the lesser lineups and, you know, he can do well there. In a championship organization like G2 that is invested so much money, $1 million for Nico, $600,000 for Monacy, God knows, next sign Hunter, what was, $400,000. You know, that's a lot of money. You want to get another player that's going to be filling that CT anchor position, and that's JKS. I can fucking say it. I don't care. So they're in a conversation to get JKS, right? And the thing is, like, his price was, I think, $200,000. Now that's insane, right? That is insane. Okay, JKS is a good player. He's a top 20 player in the 2019-20. We know what he can do. He won the Katowice with FaZe, not even playing his role, whatever. But he didn't play for a freaking year, right? No organization is going to pay $200,000 for that guy, right? But then, if you have a normal management in your team, then you can do what? You can say, like, listen, we can maybe do it like this. Maybe we give you 150,000, which will give you 100K instantly, and 50,000 from our sticker money from the next two major, right? And they say, yeah, okay, let's make that trade. And he instantly goes to a better team instead of going to a freaking bench for 1 year and having complexity. That's another subject, Duncan, as well. The complexity that's wasting money all over the place and just, you know, making some stupid interviews and statements and God knows what else. But the thing is, like, that's how you do it, right? And if they don't want to pay it, if I'm JKS and I'm his agent or whatever, by the way, he has a super good agent and I'm actually a lawyer who did a contract for me as well. The guy is insane. He's from Australia. But the thing is, like, if I'm him, I go and say, like, listen, instead of paying me $25,000 salary for the first 5 months, pay me 15,000 and, like, take off this 50,000. I'm gonna buy myself out. I'm gonna give the 50K. Not that I'm gonna give my own 50K over that 150 that you are that you wanna pay to the other organization, and I'm gonna make a lot more money playing two majors from the sticker money, from the, you know, being in a partnership with ESL Blast and playing all these events and being top 5, top 10, and all these incentives that you get in the contracts, right? And that's another subject as well. But the thing is, like, there are ways to do it. Meanwhile, they kept Jax. You know, Jax is a great guy. Like, he's super positive. He's super always, like, he's good for the team environment. But, you know, at some point, you need to let these people go. You have been here for 3 years, 4 years, whatever. You did good stuff for us. You get paid. You got paid very well. And now it's time to move on. Sell him, trade him, bench him, whatever you want to do. Bring another young player. Jake, yes, it's his prime. He's 25 years old. He has at least 4 more years of active high-level playing. You sign him, you give him a 3-year deal, and then you move on. And that's how you do it. That should have been done a year ago. Meanwhile, we have G2 paying all this money and accomplishing nothing in the last 3 years.
Indeed. By the way, on the whole angle, I thought actually the way you set that up was very good as well, because that's the area also CSGO orgs are so, and players are so short-sighted on. They act like you have to just have the money, like, here you go, sir, here is your 500,000. Like, do I have 500? Like, as you say, there are a million ways you structure the deal. Like, think how sports works. If people don't know, in the NBA, that's why they do, like, the picks in the future. If I don't have anything now, I might have something in the future I can give you, though, for value.
Hey, Duncan, I didn't expect you to say short-sighted. That's very, very mild from you. I was going to say incompetent and stupid.
Okay. That, I don't want to steal your point later, though, because there's one coming later.
Yeah. The thing is, like, there is a million ways to do it. Like, sure. They're just having competent people unable to do things, and everybody is suffering. Your org, their org, and the players are suffering. And nobody needs to suffer. It's so easy.
The angle that people have missed, though, is the one you said about the agent, though. Because, again, agents, this is the way you could get your player into teams. Because that's the problem. There are way too many orgs that want the initial buyout to be too high. And the problem is the org that you want that player to go to, if they just hear that and that scares them off, there is no discussion. There is no, like, is there a way we can make it work? Like, how do we struggle? They just immediately hear, like as you say, they hear 200K and they go, that is, you can play it for ages. And then there's no deal. Like, no one's even talking about this. Whereas in this scenario, both parties want this to happen. It's what everyone needs to happen.
The thing is, like, it's not like they need money today, right? G2's complexities, EG's and Cloud9's and all these rich organizations, you know, they don't need the money in their pocket today, right? Yes. It's not dependent. They're not going to be short on salaries the next month if they don't get their $200,000 tomorrow on their bank account. They're going to be there. It's going to come, right? You just need to wait for it and everything is going to be fine and you're going to do the good job. And, you know, it's so easy. That's the thing. That's what I'm trying to say. It's so easy to do it, but we have so many incompetent people on these positions that it's just driving me crazy just even thinking about it.
I also think that is a good pickup as well. Like, the two names for me that were obvious because they're both sat there waiting to be bought out was JKS and Valde. Like, these guys can both do this fucking job. To get them tomorrow, it's pretty much a slam dunk. And, oh, spoiler, they both would really want to be in this team. This would be their chance. Like I say, everyone would want these deals to happen in theory. So to me, yeah, it's a slam dunk. All right, we'll go to mine then.
Well, is there anything about the IGL role, Kassad, that you're aware of?
There is, but I would keep that information because, you know.
Sure.
You know.
We can tell you off the record after the episode if you want.
Yeah, I'll tell you off the record. But the thing is, like, for JKS, it's pretty much known, and he is in the conversation there. And I don't know if it's going to happen. It should happen, but, you know, it's up to them.
That one's like semi-known.
If they can find another way to fuck it up, they'll probably do it. But,
yeah. Probably will, yeah. Right, for my good point, here's what I've picked, and I've very carefully phrased it. I didn't say what I could have said, which was just the IEM Cologne final. I said what behind that is, which is I actually think the good point right now is the FaZe Na'Vi rivalry. That is what I'm loving right now. Because I notice a lot of fans, this is where fans get really boring because they become like sports fans. You know the way they do that thing where, like, 1 second before both the major final and the IEM Cologne final, everyone didn't think FaZe was going to win. You're all liars. You're all liars. None of you tweeted that. None of you bet on FaZe. You all said, not I think Na'Vi will win. You said I know Na'Vi will win. You said FaZe is overrated. They just got lucky in those tournaments because of the war with fucking Ukraine. And then what happened was, the second FaZe won both of these finals, people just went, oh, Na'Vi sucks and Simple's bad and, like, what the hell? It was obvious FaZe would win. And the reason I bring this up and frame it that way is because everyone isn't actually somehow loving this rivalry. Here's the good news about this scenario. Yes, the two big moments were the Major and Cologne, right? And Katowice. Yeah, those are the big ones that FaZe won. Aside from that, though, actually Na'Vi is one of the only teams that have properly punched back. Like, they beat them before that at Katowice. They beat him, obviously, in the Blast. Like, this is is actually, this is like a fucking, if you don't watch CSGO history, this is going to be an amazing rivalry. If these two teams stay with the same lineups and they keep meeting in the next like 3-4 tournaments, it's going to be like this. Like, I don't get the vibe when these teams meet, except for like the Blast scenario where occasionally Na'Vi might blow them out. It's either going to be like Na'Vi goes crazy like that, or it's going to be amazing games like this. Because I even think, like, if you wanted to make a matchup, you know, like they say in MMA and boxing and UFC, they always say that famous line, styles make fights, because you want to have two different styles, and that's what makes it. This is what makes this team amazing, because Na'Vi has like all the firepower in the world, but then FaZe has like just enough firepower and like all the clutch factor, fucking two-man players, everything. Like, this, you couldn't fucking cast a better match than this. So even though everyone else is like, nah, it's boring because FaZe wins all the time, I think it's amazing. Like, that final could have been won by both teams on almost every map. Like, it was incredible. You genuinely can't ask for matches like that. Like, they just drop out of the heavens. So if we can get more of those this year, that will actually save CSGO. Because if you notice, from like positions 3 to like 12, it's all over the fucking place. Yeah. No one knows. So these two teams are like, they're making CS look legit right now. They're actually giving you real world-class CS.
Yeah, I agree. The rivalry is there, definitely. And that's something we needed. Like, we didn't have that for a while. Last time, was it like that fake rivalry between Astralis and Liquid? It wasn't really alright because Liquid, Astralis didn't even play half of the tournaments and Liquid won the Grand Slam. It's like, you know, wasn't even there. And right now, we really have the true rivalry there. And I'm just afraid of, you know, like I said, orgs effing up the lineups or them doing it themselves. Right now, FaZe, for me, Simple is the best player by far in the world. He's the best player, right? But FaZe is the best team right now, you know. And we said the best player, the absolute best player, can win you a tournament or two, right?
For sure.
You know, but the best team will always be more successful, right? And it's like, you have why is FaZe the best team? Because they have elite player in every role they play, right? You have Kerrigan, you know, Hall of Famer, Hygel, one of the best that we ever had in the game. You know, every team that he joined became better instantly, right? You can say all about his frags and, you know, his style and whatever, right? But every team that he joined became better. Let's remember that Mouse with Frozen and Robs that won like 5 tournaments in a row, played 6 finals, whatever. Astralis and TSM ? Fnatic before that. You know, every team that he was in, it was better. And now you have other players like Robs, who got there for free by some, oh my god, that's another point. But the thing is, like, they have Twist, which they picked up, you know, for another elite player in an elite role, and Rain, obviously a Hall of Fame, another Hall of Fame player. Best entry, I think, that CSGO had from the beginning till now. I think you can say it like that. And altogether, like we said, they have the elite players on every single position. They made it work. But there is a expiration date on this lineup that's coming very fast for them. Right. So getting a plan, 3-year, 5-year plan coming in, because they have the core of 3 very young players, but they have 2 players with an expiration date on them.
Oh, so that is right, yes.
That needs to be managed if you want to keep that rivalry, if you want to keep that FaZe. Yeah, yeah. Because FaZe was in 2021 non-existent, not competitive team at all. They made 1 playoffs in Cologne, and that was their whole year. 12 months of FaZe.
Sure.
You know, that was that. And then 2022, they have all this success and, you know, nearly a Grand Slam. And, you know, they're playing like the best team in the world right now. And that can all turn around. But they have the core of 3 young players and they have, you know, 2 older players that needs to be, you know, they have, like I said, expiration date. And they needs to be like, you know, the plan needs to be created in order to keep FaZe as one of the best teams and keep this rivalry going on.
Well, I want to first talk about the expiration date point, because I think Rain, it's just that Rain for me was not very impressive since 2018, but the resurgence that he's had for the last now 5 months has been really impressive. And so do you think that, well, when you say that he has an expiration date, is it because he's 27 right now? So I think he still's got a year to go on this if he believes in the team. When we talked to him at the Cologne desk a little bit, he was kind of like, it almost seemed like he's renewing himself because it's like, finally we have a team that can win tournaments. So he almost kind of like was hibernating. Yeah,
he's 27, like you said, but just keep in mind on those lineups from 2018 till 2021, right? Like, what happened there? They had Adrian, Neo,
he's really, it was messy.
Try to play entry in a lineup that doesn't have a dedicated IGL, that, you know, there is a mess all over the place. Brocchi just came in. He's a young, you know, unexperienced player. Just try to fit yourself in a role of entry in a lineup like that. But your coach, you know, they didn't have a coach for a long time as well. It was like there was nothing going on for him to, you know, so he can be used in a proper way. So they got the system right. He's playing like a madman in the last, what, you know, 5 months, whatever, right? But he has an expiration that if I'm GM right now, I'm not thinking for a year. Like I said, he maybe have a year, year and a half. I'm thinking 7 years in ahead, because what? Robs is 21, 22, Twist, 22, Brocchi, 22, right? All these players can play for 6-7 years in this team, right? If they keep the performance and the level on the same note like they did in the last year, right? So I'm thinking 7 years in advance. So when I'm going to say, like, maybe 14 months before his contract is expired, I'm going to say, listen, we don't count on you in the next period. You know, we're going to try to look for a replacement for you. You work with his agent, you know, you put him in another team. You just upgrade your team in time, right? The same thing goes for Kerrigan. He's 32 years old, right?
Just get frozen.
Frozen is a little bit less aggressive, but, you know... Yeah. Frozen maybe a way to go, right? Madden is another way to go, right? He proved himself to be super aggressive. He made ends better. Like, there's options. There's always going to be options. We spoke about at the beginning of this thing how deep the talent pool is everywhere, right? So you can find a player. So it's just a matter of creating a plan, organizing it, and just executing it to keep your organization having an era more than 12 months, you know?
Right.
Because at the end of the year, they can still go back to the 2021 and just do nothing again, right?
Of course,
if you don't make the proper adjustments.
Yeah, I'll bring it back to Thorne's initial point about how great this rivalry is, though, because I think that it's clear. I think two of the best series this year have been FaZe Na'Vi. I think the Cologne Grand Finals, and then I actually thought the upper bracket Katowice group stage BO3
that they had was
really good too. I think another top game was FaZe between them and Cloud9 at Dallas, actually. But even then, those, like, two of the best series of the year for me was this rivalry. The blowout at Blast felt, I don't know, that felt like, I don't know, FaZe were just didn't care or something weird. That was odd. That was really strange to me. But if they can just keep meeting in grand finals for maybe the next couple events or for the rest of the year at Rio, let's say, I'm not complaining at all, because the Counter-Strike level is so high, and you just know what you're going to get when it's a big stage between these two teams. Like, it is going to be the best Counter-Strike in terms of actually tactics and individuals playing. I don't think there's ever been a higher point in CSGO history. This is insane levels of CS, and the calling is excellent, the clutch factor is crazy, the individual pop-offs are there, everything that needs to be happening to make these games incredibly entertaining is happening, and they're it's not just because, like, it's bad CS, it's not because people are popping off because people are not trading, it's because these players are so good, they're pushing the game.
Do you see why I get tilted, dude? That, like, the fans of the losing team are like, oh, this fucking sucks, these are the best games ever, you moron, your problem is... Your team just didn't win, like, the last round. Like, if Na'Vi had won those games, you'd be called the best final ever. Like, these are fucking sick games.
Man.
Like, I mean, even when people were telling you, like, oh, Na'Vi's throwing on inch. And, like, look at what they have to do to fucking come back. Like, you have to win a billion CT rounds in a row. Yeah. What are you talking about?
And they did it, yeah. But the thing is, like, the way I look at it, like, CS is a good, like, dish, right? It's a perfect dish. But we needed a little bit more spice, right, to make it even better. Yeah, to make it more, like, you know, eatable.
For sure,
and the rivalry between these two teams is just the spice that we needed.
Agreed.
In this event, right?
Yes.
And it's just, the dish is great. Everybody is eating it right now. Okay. How many viewers? You saw the numbers, like, in the finals. It's freaking crazy, right? And obviously, there is a question of Na'Vi, right? Like, what's going to happen with them? Is Electronic going to keep IGLing? Who are they going to bring as a fifth? Blade needs to do amazing work there. Like, he has been, like, one of the best scouts for young talents that I know.
For sure.
Especially for the CIS region. He needs to do perfect job in replacing, you know, the player. I don't know if they're going to keep SDY or not.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
Nobody knows, right? It's just when it comes to CS lineups, it's always crazy. But he needs to make a right move together with Jorg, you know, and see what they actually need and to keep this, you know, being the best or the second best.
At this point, with what he did with picking Bit and Perfecto, I'd rather he just pick a youngster as opposed to keeping SDY, if I'm being completely honest. Because SDY, despite having a couple nice moments, like Simple even said in the post-game interview, something along the lines of SDY didn't remember some grenades or something. And you know, it's tough in these kinds of situations for him to remember everything that's been laid out for him for Na'Vi in these moments. But he's also the oldest player on this entire team, by the way. He's 25. Everybody else, even Simple, is 24. Electronic, I think, is 23, and then you just have younger guys than that. So why, it's kind of like, why would you get SDY when you could look at someone like, I would say probably Hedtrick is a guy that was on the Na'Vi Academy team, and he's pretty strong. He's a really strong player there too. And if there's a reason that Na'Vi keeps picking these people for their academy teams,
it's a good thing. It's a good thing that the player break is hitting right now.
Yeah.
So he's going to sit down, Na'Vi or whatever like system they have in there, you know, they're going to sit down and see like what's the best thing that we can do for Na'Vi to remain the, you know, number one or number two for the next couple of years or whatever, right? So this break came just in a proper time for them, you know. And obviously there is the political thing that, you know,
they don't want to pick up Russians, obviously. Yeah, exactly.
It's a messy situation there. You don't know what's going to happen there. Nobody knows and how it's going to play out there. And it must be stressful, especially for the players like Simple, you know. And you know, it's not easy. But like I said, the player break came in the right moment. They have some work to do, and it's a lot of pressure. I wouldn't want to be there in their shoes right now because there is a lot of pressure right there, and let's see what they do, right?
I will say, though, by the way, I do appreciate... This is why, by the way, if you're a pro player, I've tried to be kind to them in my own way, Kassad. I've tried to explain to pro players, look, we can all banter, but if you ever actually come at me, understand, I'm on the desk, I always get the last word. I do the show, I get the last word. So you can make your great line, but for example, if you just make it like so that it's funny to make fun of you, I'll have loads of material. So I'll give you an example. As soon as I saw that thing where, even though it was kind of a cool moment because it showed he doesn't care about second place, you know when Simple threw that like MVP medal or whatever into the crowd, or second place medal from Cologne, and everyone was like, oh, I threw it. It's like the jokes write themselves. It's like, well, he'd already thrown the first place medal after map three, hadn't he? So fuck it, just throw all the medals that way. See what I mean? I can do this all day, mate. I can do this all day. This is light work for me, motherfucker. So anyway, it's like Jake Paul versus Mayweather. I'll let you stay in the fight for a while just to fuck around, but like, I will win. So okay, Kassad, what is your bad point? What we go? Because here's the thing, spoiler, the bad and the ugly ones are the real things Kassad wants to talk about in this episode. So what's the bad point, Kassad? It's a big one. It's a big one.
The bad point is like that when I see it still happening, the players are influencing roster moves, coaching moves, and like they're having the words in that are just like, you know, basically not understanding what their role is in the franchise, the organization, the sports. So we are like living in a problems that sports franchise solved 40 years ago. Like when I see players scheming together against another player, like, oh, we're gonna remove this guy, we're gonna, you know, get another guy, we're gonna remove this coach, and we're gonna bring another friend coach, and we're gonna do this. That's the worst thing that's happening right now. Well, close to second, but we'll overkill it later. But the thing is, like, this is the worst thing that's happening right now, and I cannot believe that there is so much money being flooded into these organizations by these investors and whatever, right? And this is still happening. Where are the systems in place in these organizations? Where is the, you know, the chain of command? Where is the understanding of the role that you have to play? If you're a player, obviously I'm going to listen to you. I'm going to hear you and your suggestion about the coach, about the player, about the teammate, about whatever, right? But if it doesn't align with the culture of my organization, if it doesn't align with the vision of my general manager, my head coach and my coaching staff, and the CEO who is running the vision that he has, I'm not going to listen to you. Your job is to play. Your job is to practice. Your job is to play. You're getting paid for all this, and you're getting paid very well in these top organizations. We all know the salaries are there. Your opinion will be heard. Obviously, you're not going to be pushed aside, but it needs to align to what we need to do in order to maintain to be the, you know, the championship level, the contenders, the whatever. We don't want to be tier two. Who is going to be satisfied by being always the playoff team? Is anybody going to be happy with that? No. Ask any player. Ask any organization. No, right? So, but that's another point. I want to say, like, the thing is, like, these players, and there's a lot of them in these top-tier organizations that are still making these calls. And it's still happening. And it's ruining so many organizations, and it's wasting so much money. That to the point that, and all these orgs, their partnerships with Blast, their partnerships with ESL, and they are accomplishing nothing just because they are allowing these things to happen.
If we look at some of the teams where this is not happening, it's hard for me to, like, actually, I don't know all the teams in terms of who's coming up with every decision for some of these rosters, but if I just look at an example in real sports, like LeBron being the GM of the Lakers and how bad that's turning out, and then also you look at some of the teams kind of like, I kind of know from 6 years ago, it was pretty much all players were doing it, because it felt like a lot of organizations were just pretty hands-off, and they said that the players probably knew more than we did, but at this point, there has to be an infrastructure in place so that this isn't the case, and I think that, unfortunately, what happened with Cloud9 and how Henry tried putting this thing together and then it didn't really work out, left a very bad taste in a lot of people's mouths in terms of who like, that was a very public indictment on some kind of higher up figure putting it together, but maybe Henry wasn't the guy for that role, or maybe it needs to just be somebody that's more in tune with it. And there's definitely data out there for that people are parsing through, that are they're working through in terms of who should be the up and coming players. But it definitely is not in a position right now that
you need to sort out your organization first and the systems inside, interdepartmental communication, and like the hierarchy of the things inside the organization needs to be in place first. Right. I'll give you an example, Duncan. Maybe you will know the reference, Maui. I don't know about you, how much you follow basketball, but let's go back. You watched The Last Dance, 1987, when Jerry Krause and that Reinsdorf guy comes to Michael Jordan and says, like, listen, Michael, we're gonna make a big change. We're gonna remove Doug Collins, and we're gonna get Phil Jackson, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then initial thought from Michael Jordan was like, yeah, I didn't like this, yep. Because the Phil right. Jackson is taking out, you know, ball out of my hands, and yep. Doug Collins was putting ball in my hands, right? And what did he do? Like, did he say, like, I don't want to play? Listen, I want this coach, I want that coach. That's Michael freaking Jordan, the best player of all time, you know, the superstar of all superstars in sports, right? And he accepted the decision. They had that guy, what's his name, who invented the triangular offense with Phil Jackson and
Tex Winter,
yeah. And he invented that, and he accepted that, right? So what happened after that? They had the system, they had the proper GM, Jerry Krause, obviously not known for his, you know, social skills, but for his trading skills and his, you know, job that he was doing, he was the best there is, right? The thing is, like, what happened after that? When they had things in order, they made the proper trades, they had the proper systems, what happened with the Bulls? They won 6 titles. What yeah. happened before that? When they had Doug Collins and who was the guy before him? I can't remember. They didn't get into the playoffs. They didn't do anything, right? Yeah. And with Doug Collins, they made the playoffs. They made it to the finals of the Eastern Conference, I believe. And yeah. then Michael Jordan said, like, he's like, yeah, why are you, you know, removing a guy who got us into the finals 2 years in a row or something
exactly.
like that, right?
Yep.
And then I was like, listen, this is the organization that this is the direction that the organization wants to go in. We believe that Phil Jackson is the best possible solution for us right now, for the vision that we have. We're going to bring you Scottie Pippen and you know, Bill Cartwright and, you know, all these players that were back then in Bulls. And then we're just going to go with it. They lost to Pistons twice in a row, but the system worked. The process worked. They became one of the most successful franchises in the 90s in basketball, right?
Yes. But So you know, I think one example of just like this happening more recently in CS was that whole like phase, like revolving door of just like Adren coming in, Neo coming in, people like basically what was it, Nico and the rest of the phase guys were just vetting people that they saw in the past, like Cold Zera, and then everybody was just like, oh, these guys were good when we played against them, so let's just try to get them, and it just never worked until basically Kerrigan came back into the lineup, and I think Kerrigan has a more like higher up perspective for all of this, so he can like has a more top down view, so he probably is someone worth consulting. But basically I do agree with the point that basically there's not many people that you can trust in this space in terms of who should be picking out players, because every player is like, oh, this guy owned me one time, and they don't look at the, you know, the wealth of data beyond that, their one-on-one matchup that they had with them.
Look the personalities, they don't look the roles, they don't look like how this guy, how old is this guy, how can he perform, when is his peak, like there's so many aspects of like bringing in a player into the system, you know, other than this, I'm going to just message him on Steam on Twitter to see if he wants to join, and then yeah. I'm going to go to my CEO, hey, listen, let's kick this guy and maybe, you know, you pay 200k and get this one, and then 6 months later that doesn't work out, obviously, because you pick the completely wrong person for the wrong role, and then here we go again. We pick another player and then play the lottery until we fucking hit the jackpot. And how many people do you know that hit the jackpot on lottery? Does anybody know anyone?
Fuck all. Who knows anyone? Exactly.
Zero, right? So it's a matter of organization. I don't blame the players. They are just, you know, being kids.
No. Here's the problem. In all these scenarios, it's like when a player joins a team. I'll give you an example. S Attack to Cloud9 is the best example ever. You know, when everyone flamed that move, the one person you cannot flame is S Attack. Like, that's the best contract he was ever offered. He, for his own personal career, he should say yes to that contract, of course. Like, it's the org you should flame. Like, you can't flame S Attack. He's doing the best he can for his career. And that's actually what I would say generally about this topic. It's not that if you're a pro player, where, like, you're an idiot, you don't know CS, and you can't ever have a say. No, as Kassad says, there's a natural order of things. Like, for example, these are like straw men where people are acting like the only options are, like, you know, obviously as an example, but like either Nico picks the team or only like G2. It's like, you'd always ask Nico, is he fucking star player you paid $1 million for? Like, you're going to at least find out what he thinks and what he thinks is missing in the team, or if he knows somebody would join. But the point is, you're not just going to let him make the choice. You're going to make the choice. And this is the reason why I think this is fucked up. Because I know for players, they think actually the other way around. They think, right, this is the tough, we're in a catch-22 scenario here, guys, like this, which is the people who currently would take that power from the player and make that choice, they aren't qualified, which is kind of what we're alluding to. Like, for example, if people don't know, the number one problem I had in the Flashpoint period wasn't that there weren't good players that could sign, it's that when I would go to these orgs, I would even be like asking these American orgs, like, so who does they make the decisions? And whenever I would go to their GM was, it would be like a guy I've never heard from in esports, and I've been behind the scenes for 20 years. Like, some of these people weren't even from CS. So look, if you tell Stewie or Nico or Fallen, yeah, that's the guy who's making the call, well, now they're going to think you're the idiot. Like, what the fuck are you doing? But the problem is, in the future, if that guy is Kassad or it's someone else who's got experience, eventually that's going to make more sense, for precisely the example he gives, by the way, that essentially, because you're looking on a longer term picture and you're looking at different things, like in the basketball analogy, you're not just looking how good at they score the basketball, you're looking at things like, do we need like a defensive player, do we need like a center, like what they needed Bill Cartwright, for example, do we want to change the system of the team, like, for example, if people don't know, the reason why that's a great example, the Michael Jordan one, I was actually going to bring it up myself, is because if people don't get it, if you asked a fan, Michael Jordan won all those championships, that must be his favorite style of playing basketball, how they played. No, it's the opposite, you idiots. He actually even said, famously, he even gave this advice later to Kobe, who had to play in the same system, of like, right, what you do in this system basically is just play in the system for the first three quarters so the team can like play the game, and then you just decide when you take over in the fourth quarter, you just say fuck the system and take any shots you want. Like, essentially he was fighting against the system. So I always said this, because it's a great line for sports in general, it works for CS. I always say this, if you're the superstar player and it's not perfect, yeah, obviously, mate, you can already win the game yourself. The system's for the other players, you fuck. So if you're Nico, like, yeah, I get it, you'd rather just do what you want, you're Nico, mate. But my question is, how's Jax gonna get his frags? How am I gonna get something for this guy over here? You know, like, that's what we need, the system for. So if you don't know, there's a million stories like that, by the way, where people who were the best player, like Michael Jordan, Kobe, if you ever go and look season to season, like the people they were asking their GMs for, dude, it's embarrassing. Like some of these names you wouldn't even know now. There are players that Michael Jordan asked for that like 2 years later, no one knew him. You know, like the guys who have like a fluke that hit one all-star game. They would be asking for these guys and they wouldn't just ask Maui Snake, like, oh, I'd suggest you miss it. They'd be like, if you don't get me this guy, like, we can't win. Like, they were like little kids. And the problem is, in this scenario, again, it's not like they're an idiot. It's just that they're thinking too short term. In fact, players, by the way, even on a sports level, are a bit like CSGO players. When they lose the big championship, it's the end of the world. Like, nah, this team can never win. Like, fuck it. Or they go the other way, which is worse. The other one's worse, like you said. You make like the Eastern Conference Finals and you go, well, we don't need to change then. It's like, that might actually be exactly why you need to change. Maybe that's where you're stuck. But because, you know, that example, I'll tie it into our earliest point. It was actually your good point, Maui Snake, about G2 making changes. Even though people did go more on the Vitality side on this one, I think the wackest take in 2022 is that take that goes, maybe they should have stuck with the old G2 lineup. That would be even worse! Dude, that lineup would be going nowhere in the modern day. What with FaZe Clan and all these like new teams? That old G2 lineup of Armanek and Jax. Dude, that wouldn't even be relevant in Majors. They would have nothing. Because you know one thing I think I'm so sick of in CS is all these fucking pros and coaches who like, it's like they want to recommend players to other teams but not theirs. So you know when Armanek was leaving and they were all like, oh, such a shame. I always thought he was underrated. Someone should sign him. None of them, of course. I know it's like they don't fucking rush out. Like, Armanek, please join our team. Like, oh, I wish he was on a team. Oh, he could join your team. But nah, definitely. Oh, we don't speak French. Like, you know what I mean? Like, fuck off. So there's loads of that going on. So all I would say in general is, the problem is this. The reason it used to work to have players make the teams is because there was no business considerations. Exactly. Basically, if you said yes to join, you can join. So what that meant that was good about players making teams back in the day was the top players had ultimate status. So they just went, and it was easy. By the way, it was easy. There was no scouting. If you were like Swedish and you were Forrest and Getright, or Khan or whatever, you just go to the next best Swedish player who's tearing it up. And there's no deal. You just go, do you want to be in our team? Right, problem solved. You're in. Right, look, boys, you weren't scouting there. That's the most slam dunk obvious person to sign ever. Now there's nuance though. Now there's contracts. Now we can't just ask everyone. So at the moment, in my opinion, when you add in business deals and hundreds of thousands of dollars and negotiate and having a plan, do we get them after the major? Do we get them before? Do we do that? The player can't have a say in that, mate. You can have an opinion, but you can't make the decision. Because especially, because the last thing I'll say is this. The area where it's killing me when these players make these deals is also like sports. They're not here for 10 years. Some of these guys are going to play in your org for 2 years. So some of these guys will rock up halfway through their contract. Stewie2K has done this in about 3 orgs now. Rock up, change half the team, cut out like good players. By the way, here's the joke if you're Team Liquid is how badly you've organised your team. If you were Team Liquid and I didn't know the history, I'd go, you should be really trying to sign that Twists guy. He could be really good. You let him fucking go because of Stewie2K, you moron. Like, the joke is, he is now, because you caught him, better than anyone who would join your org. That shows you have let someone fuck your team up. So in this scenario, like, I hate it in general, where, like, I call them, like, the CSGO royalty Kassad. It's the people who, like, they just get to do whatever they want. They just walk through the world like Thanos with a fucking Infinity Gauntlet, just, like, changing reality. Like, he is gone, he's not in this team anymore. Now this guy's here. It's fucking mental. I can't handle it.
It's so bizarre that these organizations are not following the recipes of successful sports teams. Like, look at, for example, Real Madrid right now. Luka Modric, you know the player, right? Everybody knows him. He was the heart and soul of Real Madrid in the past 10 years, right? Without him, they wouldn't win half the stuff they want, right?
Sure.
Even more. And now he's 36 years old. He's 37, right? After they won the Champions League this year, they didn't come up and say, like, oh, Luka, hell, have another 5-year contract, yep. 300 million euros, let's go. They gave him a 1-year contract. And that's
it. Ruthless. Yeah,
they're going to, you know, send him, they give him the papers after. Thank you for being a big part of our organization. We won with you. You've made a lot of money. You are a Hall of Fame. You won the best player of the world 1 year in the competition of Messi and Ronaldo. Yeah. But goodbye. We are looking towards a new plan. You know, for the next 10 years, we need the next Luka Modric. And that's how you keep it going. Keep your team on the highest level. Not keep the same player for 350,000 seasons. And paying him $17 million, and then wonder why you lose money.
Yeah, by the way, even though this might sound like a joke, I almost mean it when you think how bad some of these teams are. If you're one of those teams, like when Astralis gave Zipnix that enormous contract, when he's obviously not that good now, when you basically paid him for the years he was good, but now, in the future, instead, here's my joke. Just get a different player in the spot and just give Zipnix 100k. Just give him the money. Just give him a sack of money and go, there's your sack of money. Great job. Get the fuck out now, though. Yes. He can't be in the team for 5 years. Like,
yes. I was reading the interviews, like, the headline of the interview of Astralis' coach is, there is not going to be any changes. And I'm thinking, are you blind? Are you blind? Like, do you see the role clash? Can you see it? Right? Zipnix is 26 years old. He's not that, you know, he's not old. He has still time, right? But his job in that team is non-existent, right? Yeah, he doesn't have a position in that team anymore, right? I'm looking to trade him to another team, right? Sell him, fire him, give him 100k, like you said, just get rid of him, whatever. Yes. Get a player that can deliver in the system that you have for the next 3 years. You have Confing, who is an absolute beast. You have Blamef, people calling him a baiter. He's improving. He has tremendous impact. You have one of the best IGLs in the history of CSGO. That's the three players. Get another player and see what you can do if you can bring back Device. That's another freaking point, because Device has disappeared from the face of the earth. If I'm a GM, I do my best to bring him back.
For sure.
The guy is one of the best hoppers that we have ever seen. You know, the Mr. Consistency, that everybody wants to have this guy. Where is he? Nobody's talking about him.
By the way, that's crazy. Think how crazy that is in itself.
Let's steal him back.
It's one thing if he says he doesn't want to come back, right? But here's what is crazy, and this brings me back to the Flashpoint example. Dude, I'll give you a quick example. During the Flashpoint thing, right, and there was all these players that, like, I was telling all the teams, like, sign this guy. So one of them, you might remember, was Alex before Cloud9. He was benched from Vitality, right? And he said he wanted to go to a Flashpoint org. So I was going to all these Flashpoint orgs, you can imagine, at the top NA orgs, and when I would tell them, like, oh, you can get this guy, Alex, he's really good, they were asking me, right, asking me the question. They were going, well, like, does he have his visa? I was like, we'll just go ask him. Like, why are you asking me that? Like, you're the GM, you fuck. Like, inquire about it. Because that's the one thing I don't get here, Mary Snake. It's one thing if Device chooses not to come back. Every single org that isn't FaZe Clan, who speaks English as their primary language, their GM should at least know his status. Does he want to come back? Is he available to be signed? Would he sign for X amount? Because like he's saying, mate, this is the player, this is the player you get the lottery ticket to right now. Whoever wins the lottery that gets Device to come back is going to get, like, one of the best players in the entire history of CSGO. One of the most eligible fucking orpers, and he speaks perfect English. Like, how much more do you want? Like, what is your job as GM? Just fucking pick up free shit off the floor.
No,
like,
no, get those him, people, get him. They're good in making Google Sheet documents, man.
It's true. Excel
documents. Excel documents, Google Sheet, and telling you some random numbers. And you put him in a chair in front of an actual person, and he doesn't know what to do. He's asking you, does he have a freaking visa?
Exactly.
Are you kidding me? Fired. Fired. Straight up. That's it.
Oh, man.
And also, all these people are responsible for these players' contracts, which is another most ridiculous thing in esports.
No, it's not in there at all.
150 years behind the traditional sports. We actually managed to go even back in time.
No, it's
right?
Mad, isn't it?
Like, yeah. You're going backwards instead of forward, right? There is, like, all these contracts that are being signed by players. They are signing for, like, 2 years, 3 years, but basically, they're playing month at a time, right? Like, you get sacked, you maybe get like 1 or 2 months of severance pack if you are lucky, if you have a good agent or not. If you get benched, you get some sort of, you know, a percentage for being on the bench, and
yes,
that's it.
Maybe but half basically a playing or a quarter, yeah, sure.
Basically playing month for month, right? Yes. When are we gonna start that? This is something that I wanted to propose to EG, but I never got a chance because they picked somebody else over me the position of the head coach for the second time in 6 months. Let's see how that works out. So I wanted to propose like a non-traditional way of actually, you know, doing contracts, right? Let's say you sign a contract with a player for 3 years. You give them less money. Instead of 25,000, you give them 15,000, but you guarantee them in case they get fired, you pay out 70%, 75% of their total contract.
It's basically what they do. If people don't know, this is actually how the NFL is structured. In the NBA, all the contracts are guaranteed. So the problem with the NBA, Kazan, is the other way around. Everyone knows it's when you give the guy the max contract who looks really good, but then he becomes half as good and you've sort of fucked your franchise for 5 years. But what they do in the NFL is between the two. In the NFL, like if someone's like, essentially if someone was the equivalent of Nico, where they'd have everyone bidding for them and they're obviously the best, yeah, you'll get all the guaranteed money. And then what they do is the person who's like more likely to get injured, maybe he has the money, but it's not guaranteed. And if he gets injured, he gets none of it. So basically, I actually agree with you. It would make more sense to sort of have a deal where it's like, what we're both gambling on there is, I'm gambling that I have to pay you out the money for longer, but it's slightly less. And then you're gambling that you're going to be good enough still that it's not worth a bad deal for both of us. Yeah.
It all ties together. If you get a good GM, you know, good people deciding on these contracts and negotiating, you pick the right player. It's easier on your books. It's easier on your budget. You get the financial security for the player. And then if you have a 36 months of contract, right, at like 18 months mark, you say like, okay, this is the player that I want to keep building my team around. Is this the player that's important for my team? If it's not, you still have 18 months, right? And then you go to his agent and you say like, listen, we are not planning to keep this guy. You can go and explore in the next player break, explore your options, see where we can sell him, see who wants to go. If you're a GM, you go to your fucking organizations and ask. Like, listen, we are not planning to keep it. Make it public. Doesn't matter, right? Those things are always get public somehow. Sure. And it's like, you know, you sell him for another, like, he doesn't really fit in our system, you know, we're going to sell him in the next player break, and then you get rid of him. Obviously, you don't pay the 75% in case you sell the player, only in case you fire him, right? So he has that financial security right there. If he performs badly, if he, you know, his numbers are low and he's like, you know, playing terrible, obviously a lesser team is going to buy him for less money, he's going to get less salary, but it's his own fault, right? It's not organization's fault that he's playing badly, right? It's the way it is. On the other hand, the 80% of the salary to the contract needs to go from the actual contract, and 20% needs to go from the players, what do you call it, like being professional, attitude, work ethics, all that stuff, so we can avoid the Stewie Malik situations, right? Where I can see, like, where if my player is refusing, I don't know what it's true or what it's, I'm just giving an example, right? Like, if he's not calling a timeout when I'm calling a timeout, if he's like, you know, not listening to me when I'm explaining the strat or the default or whatever it is that I'm doing, if he's like doing something else and he's late on practice, the first reaction for me is like, I'm going to sit you down and tell you, listen, this is not going to work like this. Right? Not in front of everyone, not in front of the whole team. I don't go to the management or the GM or the CEO and complain about the player. I sit you down in my office, in the headquarters of the whatever organizations we are bootcamping in. I sit you down and tell you, listen, this, we cannot go forward like this. This is the problem. I see the vision of my team going like this. You are on the role of the IGL, and I need you to do these kind of things. We have to avoid this. If that doesn't work, then this 20% goes off. That's the second safety. If that doesn't work, I go straight to the upper management, a chain of command, whatever, and say, listen, this type of player is not, you know, in the vision of what we want to do. I want to put him on the bench. I want to trade him. I want to offer him to another, and I want to go to the next player that's going to, you know, fit my criteria and do whatever I need to do to make my team better, you know. So these contracts are absolute joke these days. Like, we have organizations right now, they're, you know, they're losing players left and right with being free agents, but we're going to cover that later, you know, the complexity players, the X-Mile, the Robs went for free, Blame F and the other players. But contracts are a joke at the moment right now, and until that gets fixed, we are not going to go forward at all.
Now, obviously, this is usually the part where I come and I place a little bet to show you how the system works and pick out a team that might win, etc. But it's the player break at the moment. We haven't got any big matches going on at Tier 1. So I'll just introduce you to the fact that eSportsBet has released their new hybrid AI compliance system, which opens up every single player to more matches around the world while also making withdrawals faster, being able to better target the cheaters who ruin the markets for everyone. So basically, it's a better system to make sure the people who are scamming and part of betting rings and doing dodgy match fixing, that they just get caught and flagged by the system, but the legit people who are betting and making predictions on things they actually think will happen within their own little friend group or just their own personal agency in the world, they don't get targeted or they don't have issues withdrawing their money, because obviously we want the system to be as legit as possible and the dodgy people to get punished and the legit people to get rewarded, right? Now, I will say, you can get, if you've never deposited using this link, with our referral link below, you can get a 50% deposit bonus on up to $200 when you deposit to EsportsBet. That was a good segue point. Now, Snake, what was your bad point?
Kind of relevant, I suppose, because it's basically my bad point is that if Ents just lets Sphinx leave to Vitality in some way, I think this is just lights out for Ents. And I really appreciated what Ents have put together for the last, say, eight or so months, basically turning into this new year. Everything has looked really nice for them, and since the Stockholm Major, I think they've just been on an upward trajectory, actually. And for them to lose their star player, I think that's just... I don't even know if that's necessarily good for Sphinx in terms of the role that he's going to be playing, in terms of what he's going to be doing on that team. I think that the contract or the money is going to be definitely higher for him on Vitality, and that's why he has to strongly consider that sort of option. But in terms of where both of those teams are headed, for me, yeah, Ents didn't have a great turnout at Cologne. I think that... that's something I would be more likely to write off than what I've seen for Vitality, where it's like, really, you want to just jump into this team that has so many persistent issues? That doesn't sit well with me in terms of Sphinx's trajectory, in terms of his career. And if he just goes one for one for Masuda, some of those roles actually are okay for him, but they're not all perfect. So I don't think that that's actually... I don't think that's necessarily that good. I really just don't think it's that good for him. And I really just think that this guts Ents in a way where this was a team that... consistently felt like they were a top four, top five team at almost every tournament that they played, and even so much so that when they played at Dallas using a stand-in for Sphinx, the system carried them so hard, and a couple other players stepped up in their roles that they were still able to achieve a top two status, a top two finish there. So for the one tournament to go badly, and for these rumors to already be popping up that Sphinx is going to leave, that they're going to be taking him on Vitality, I just think that's just... it's a double whammy in terms of things being bad. I think it's just bad for Ents, not even necessarily that good for Sphinx.
They don't have a choice if they're Ents. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. That's the problem, right? For Ents, it's obviously going to be bad, especially if they, you know, lose him and bring players like Snacks. Like, because he played a good tournament before, yeah. Like, you know, that's a disaster. That's, I always admire Ents, to be honest. Yeah. The way they assembled this team from nothing, you know, back when Alexi was there and the sure. Sergei and the whole team, and they just fell into this pit of, you know, nothingness. And they brought themselves up, and Natu and whoever did, and the coach, so I respect a lot. I think he's doing a very good job. Yeah, yeah. Brought this team together, and they're playing well. But the thing is, like, being Ents... is just, that's the problem. The Ents, yeah. You know, that's Borussia Dortmund for you, right? And Sphinx is Haaland for you, right? He is going to go. He is going to take the higher contract. He is going to go to your Manchester City, to your Real Madrid, you know, in this case being Vitality or whatever the other team is, right? If he decides to stay, I think that would be a problematic for him, right? Unless they can bring another offer, which they missed out on Dexter, in order to get them into the competition yeah. to be a title contender team right now. So I honestly don't think the rumors of him wanting to leave is because of the bad Cologne. It's just getting into a team with Zaivu and Zonic and, you know, and this other, the organization like Vitality, right? Which is a very respectable and very, you know, financially stable, let's say it like that, right? They can offer him high yes. contract, and I would take it. If I'm Sphinx, I would take it. In terms of roles, to answer that, I think there is a slight gap in the aggressiveness. I think Sphinx is more of a aggressive on his own term than being in a system kind of player. But, you know, if you're Zonic, you are still a Hall of Fame coach that needs to do this and needs to make this need to make this happen. I would like to see JKS also in that lineup. That would fit very well. But also, we could have to go back to the expiration date of some of those players. Dupree is 29 years old. He's past his prime. He has good games, but he needs to constantly have good games so you can have the finals against FaZe, so you can have the finals against Navi. So they need to fix that role as well. It's not that Spinks is going to be an upgrade for them, but you know, I want to see Dupree for the next 12 to 18 months delivering his old form. Otherwise, they need to find a replacement there too.
Yeah, for me, I would go mainly on the end side of it, because like Kassad says there, the real problem is this. Like, I even addressed it with Nata when I did an interview with him, what, like a month and a half ago or something. It's just like, it was inevitable at some point this guy's going to go. And actually, if you even know the business of sports and esports, actually, if you have a player like that, as counterintuitive to a fan as it might seem, you actually want to sell him before the contract runs out. Like, it's way worse to just wait till like the day of his contract's up and he just goes, right, I'm going, but it's for free, see ya. And you're just sat with nothing. Like, you'd wait rather have like 200,000 or something, try and buy another player and see if he can become good. Because the real problem if you Ents is, like I say, realistically, like, he'd have to be a very unique type of player to choose to say. Like you gave the Haaland example there, Kassad, but the other, I'll give you another example. It's a more extreme one, but I'm a Liverpool fan, right? So you can imagine, like, me and my family who support Liverpool, we didn't even pretend like Mohamed Salah's going to sign again, mate. We actually all just thought, if he doesn't, look, we had the best we want. Look, we got all the fucking European Cup out of it, won the league. Like, if he just said, like, I'm going to Barcelona for the next 10 years, that would, or PSG or something, that would actually be totally par for the course the way football works. Because the problem is this, right? Was Liverpool the best team before he joined? Of course they fucking weren't. He is the reason that they were really good, but as a result, logically, if he then leaves, they're not going to be as good. So it rarely, every now and then you'll get a player that will just choose to stay bizarrely, and just maybe they have a, maybe money's not as important to them, maybe they like the vibe. But the problem, I'll tie the 2 points you guys made together, is this. One, the real problem Ents has is this. Yeah, they had a good team. Like, yeah, the Dallas run looks good. But Spinks was the main reason why they were so good, because he's such a mega player. And if you lose him, there isn't another player you can replace him with right now. Like, the actual funny thing is, as Kassad says, if you actually look at their team now, they really should have been the team that went crazy to get Dexter. If they had Dexter and Spinks, mate, now we'd be cooking with gas with that lineup. Imagine that squad. So I look at their team, and it's like, sadly, this was always going to happen. I figure they could probably still be good, but I don't believe that, like, there's a player that's going to replace him and they're going to be better. Like, it's just the nature of being a smaller team in esports. And on the side of why he goes to the team, it's like I gave on the example back there. The reason you can't totally blame the football player who goes to the biggest club is because the other thing they're all thinking is this. They're not thinking how you are, Maui, as an analyst. Like, but look at all the problems they've had. And like, maybe the coach doesn't even work. And it's never... Because here's the problem with players as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Players never think they're the one that'll fill me. It'll never be me. Like, when I join Vitality, that's going to be
better.
Zero's going to be the best in the world. Now I've got the best in the world open instead of Hades. And you know what? Zonic, he's going to love coaching me. So he's going to be back on his prime. And all those great Astralis players, I've always wanted to play with them. And, what, I get paid loads of money and I'm famous in Vitality. Like, essentially, to Spinks, he doesn't think there is a downside, mate.
Right,
to him,
right.
this is his dream deal. Like, I'm signing. I bet he'll even do it. He should even do what Haaland did, because I'd do that fucking bullshit thing they all do in football, where you go, it was always my dream to play for Vitality. You know when they do that? Because it's a really famous thing, Maui. In English football, just to lay it on for like dumbass fans, they always lie if they're a foreigner and claim that like that English club they're joining was like their boyhood club, even though there's no way like a fucking Danish player was like Manchester City in like the 1980s or something. But yeah, the joke is like players always just see them, they only see the grass is greener when it's joining the big org, you know, because they think it's their time to be the top player now, you know.
Unless you have the, you know, foreign investment coming in for like $500 million or anything like that, right? That you can be a PSG or a Manchester City, right? And has to settle with the fact that they're going to be your Tottenham, right? They're going to be Borussia Dortmund, your Olympic Marseille, right? They're going to be sending their players. We mentioned Luka Modric. He was a Tottenham player before he went to Real Madrid. Not many people remember that. But, you know, you have to accept that fact. And it's going to be very difficult for them to find another replacement. You know, that's going to be so impactful, like Sphinx was. But like you said, there is no downside for Sphinx, right?
See, what we need, obviously, Kassad in eSports, if I'm putting two and two together, is we just need that mega shady, like, Croatian, like agent guy who's the one who sells all those players. Because if you don't know, there's that, if you think eSports is bad, there's a guy, famously, Modric is one of the players. There's this guy in their region, Maui Snake, that's so powerful as an agent. He basically just, like, decides where you go, and then he gets, like, loads of the money himself every time you go.
He's now
the team.
Stuck in Bosnia, and he cannot leave the country because they want to put him in prison.
I'm not doubting he's like a criminal, obviously.
He's living in a hotel. He's living in a freaking hotel for like a couple of years now. He can't escape anywhere. He's just sitting there having his millions and just enjoying life as much as he can, you know.
It's classic. Yes. Right, okay, well, let's move on. Here was my bad point, because I think this is one where you have to sort of be, here's everything, everyone on the show, to be fair, is an analyst. So you guys will get my point, but fans won't. So this is going to sound salty, right? Because my bad point is that Team Liquid didn't beat Movistar Riders. So if you're a fan, right, you're like, what the hell? Why are you hating on Movistar? Like, I'll tell you why I'm hating on them. Because the semi-final was shit. Because what happened was, Movistar caught lightning in a bottle like five times in a row. And then you guys go, maybe they'll do it six. It's like, no, oh, fuck it, I'll bet against that. And so I just saw them play. Like, that semi-final looked like they may as well have just walked up and just handed FaZe the final. Like, there you go, mate, see ya. Like, there wasn't even a real match. Meanwhile, also, I'm not hating. Team Liquid was very close to winning that game. And here's the difference. Look, Team Liquid could have lost, but just the premise of that semi-final would have been so much more interesting, wouldn't it? Like, imagine your Kindar against FaZe. Imagine what the map pool would have been.
By
the
way, Liquid versus Swiss.
Would have been so interesting. Just the narratives. And so it's just because if you're an analyst, this is why we always hate on upsets. We don't hate on the underdog. We just hate on what it does to the bracket, unfortunately. Like, if you notice, by the way, that even almost fucked FaZe. Another reason why people didn't think FaZe was going to win until they won the final is because you look who they played and it's like, who the fuck is anyone playing now? Like, these are all like nobody teams. Like, because the whole tournament was upsets, wasn't it? Like, you just played like Astralis is like who you beat. Like, you know what I mean? Like, what the fuck? So I think like TL would have just made it a better semi, mate. It would have been a way better semi. Come on.
Yeah, well, everybody loves the Cinderella story, right? Everybody they likes do. The underdog. Do, everybody course, likes sure. the amazing runs and everything.
Sure.
But it's just, when you look at Liquid, they are in a shambles. Their team, like, ever since they brought Shox, and I don't even know what that was, but, you know, and just it feels like they're just blindly walking through the minefield, you know, without, you know, having any idea where they're going to go, where they're going to end up, are going to step on a mine and explode. But the thing is, like, what I did like is the fact that they brought in new coach, Daps, right? He was an original IGL NA, he understands NA, you know, and he deserves a chance, right?
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, give him a chance. Let's see what he can do. But it also ties up to the organization and how they run their thing, how they run their project, how much of the responsibility and saying he's going to have rather than, for example, a Liege or somebody else, right? That who's going to decide who's going to be staying or leaving and what kind of gameplay are they going to be running into the next season and what's going to happen after that, right? So there is a lot of to be done there. I don't envy their spot right now. They are a respectable organization that goes for the titles. That's for their hope for every time they play a tournament, and they have a lot of work to do. But yeah, like you said, I mean, Movistar Riders, they played all right throughout they caught the lightning in the bottle five times in a row. Yeah, sure, but you know, they showed some players that had potential, like some Pius. I've been talking about this guy since Pro League, Maui, probably you even remember that part, right? So that guy is legit. That guy is legit. That guy is not bad at all. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody, let's say, maybe Ants for that matter, maybe they go for him.
That would be a bad pickup, if he wants to go to a non-Spanish team, yeah.
Well, I want to, be a team that's part of DSL, that's a higher chance of making the major and playing these all events. And, you know, why don't I go to Ants? They certainly can pay more than Movistar Riders, right? So there is there is something that can be take out from this event in terms of individual players for that team.
You know the funny thing, by the way, I even think, like, because I actually think people overrated the Sun Pius guy just because, like, it was just because his scores, like, oh my god, he's 21-3 on CT side or something. It's like, the worlds that he just hits the normal shots, but that's actually why I even think he's mega eligible, Kassad. Because the joke is, when I say he's like a Spanish device, that isn't an insult, you idiot. Every fucking IGL would want that player. If I could just set someone up who just holds an angle and hits that shot at, like, 7 out of 10 times, like, that's a fucking great player to have.
Well, I'll take those odds every time,
Yeah, exactly.
I'll take those odds every time, and I'll take those players. those players, because not everyone is freaking simple. Not everyone is Zaivu.
I even think, by the way, simple in some way, people like simple. You know how people always say Steph Curry ruined the NBA because everyone just shoot three-pointers? Simple ruined Orping because he made every fucker just try and flick constantly. That only works if you're simple. Like, the joke is this. I always say to me, I don't even really view Brokey as like a traditional AWPer, because Brokey's at his best like mid-range, because all he does is flick really fast. If Brokey holds like long on Dust 2, he's not going to hit those shots. That's not his style. He's not the super slow. Like, that type of AWPer is almost obsolete in CS. So when they come along like device support, they're really useful, because tactically they'll always fit in your team. That's not the guy you just let go and do what he wants. You put him where you want him, he gets that kill.
In your system, if he hits those shots, that's what you need. Like, from that player. I don't need him to drop 37 frags every map.
Exactly.
If I'm relying on that to happen on every map, I shouldn't be a coach, we shouldn't be a team, and we shouldn't be expecting us to win any tournaments. If I'm expecting my op to deliver 30 bombs every freaking game. No, you need to hit your shots that they're set up for you. That's the people that are going to into your crosser, you need to hit those shots. Let's say 7 out of 10 times. And I'm happy. You did your job well. Yeah. Rest of the people will do their job. Entries, splashes, utility, spacing, everything in terms of like in-game stuff. If it goes correctly, you have a winning team right there.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with SunPius is that actually his drop-off to T-side is really bad. I was talking about it before they started playing the FaZe series. I was like, I mean, they were happy about that Ancient pick against FaZe because they just did so well against Liquid, but SunPius on T-side is like their second worst player. He was, okay, just looking at some of the numbers, 0.69 KD on T-side for this event, but on CT side, 2.15 kill death. Like, it's insane, his drop-off to T-side. That being said, the thing about that really hurt me from Ovistar and like why it's tough to see this team going further is that when I tried so many times to ask them, what is happening now that's working for you guys? What is clicking now that wasn't in these events prior to this, when you're coming last place Dallas, last place in like a Blast Showdown, and now you're winning Challenger, now you're top four at this event? And they never knew. They never understood. They never for one second even could like pinpoint what's going differently. They're just like, oh, we're just like feeling it now, it's all coming together. It's like, so
you, and like, whose fault is that?
Yeah, so I mean, I asked everybody. I asked Davy G, I asked Mopaz, I asked Alex, I think I even asked Blade. I like asked everybody. I was like, what is going on? Like, why are you good now all of a sudden, guys? And I think they just ramped up really hard for Valencia. I think they tried really hard for that event, knowing it's going to be like a Spanish event. They put in probably a ton of hours, and then they just kept riding that. I think that they look like a really legit team, especially like 3v3s, 2v4s. 2v4s, like, they just were winning those like crazy. Like, I was so shocked at how many rounds they brought back. But like, some of the ways that they brought things back just was like, yeah, you guys are playing really good individually, and there's glimpses of good teamwork here and there. But like, I just... After the player break, it will not shock me at all if Movistar just kind of has this sort of drop-off like Spirit had at the Major.
What's the end game there? You know, they keep the Spanish team. How many players can they, you know, bring up in case they need to replace someone? What's their limit for this team? Is this the semifinals in Cologne and maybe making the Major and that's it? Because I don't see much past that, right? Simply because the Spanish scene is not that big, right? They have basically only that team and that's it, right? I don't know. It's just, for me, it was a Cinderella run. It was a fairy tale story on these couple of events, and that's it.
The craziest thing to me, dude, is the actual last map against Liquid was the ultimate moment of the Cinderella story. Yeah. Here's why. The angle no one points out about that match is that fucking Deaths guy, the IGL, had like 30 kills or something on fucking Vertigo against Liquid. Some of the best aimers in a night. That's never going to happen again. You can fucking... That's like when Zeus 30-bombed against Astralis at that Cologne, like in 2018. Like, mark it on the calendar. It's like, that's like Halley's Comet passing by, mate. Like, your children might see that once in a lifetime. Like, that ain't happening again. When I saw that result, I was like, this is so unlegit. It's ridiculous. Like, I'm not even hating on him. He's just not a star player, is he? Like, it's not
hating. No, he's not even...
to understand, like, there is no, like, everybody can be a freaking star player. You know, there is an NBA reference, another one, maybe a little younger than, you know, not the Jordan era, but take the Miami Heat with the big three, right? They had Mario Chalmers, Mike Miller, you know, that Udonis Haslam guy with 47 years old. You know, they all did their jobs, right? Mario Chalmers were doing, like, you know, he was a point guard, like, being in the starting five, right? Mike Miller, you know, shooting threes without one shoe on his foot, like, doing, you know, all these crazy things, but, you know, they're not the stars of the team. It's LeBron, it was Chris Bosh, it's Wade, right? It's, people, like, need to understand, about going back to the same thing, understand your role in the team. Be the most valuable in your own role, and you'll be safe in your team. You're going to have success. You're not going to be Michael Jordan. Not everybody's going to be Michael Jordan. You have to be Bill Cartwright. You have to be Tony Kukoc.
Exactly.
You have to be, you know, Luke Longley and all these players, right? There, but without them, you wouldn't be able to get those, you know, to get those titles as well. They're a vital part altogether in the whole machinery of the team.
Yes. Right, here's the thing. We're now going to go on to the ugly point. And this is definitely going to be like this. If you think that was like ranting before, like, this is going to be a rant, right, Kassad? Because this point now, your ugly point, is low key. Like, you didn't even just think this up for the show. I can tell you really fucking pissed off with this.
No, this is something that bothers me for years now. Like, these orcs working backwards, basically, and just throwing money straight into the bin. I think the more use of the money would be if you actually burn the money and just keep themselves warm because, you know, the winter is coming and everything like that. So it's like what they're doing, that the structure of these organizations is completely abysmal. Take a look at the example of Complexity, right? Right now, this lineup of Complexity is twice as worse as the one in Berlin Major when Jason Lake came out with the Juggernaut.
Right, yes, like, sure.
That lineup is twice as better than this one. Right. So,
yeah.
And they appointed, who is it? Messioso guy to run the CSGO project. The guy without any experience in organizing the team. The guy without any knowledge in organizing the roles and personalities and mashing everything together, right? And I was like, put in that position to do all these things. Why? Like, he came up with this idea to get this team all together. They played 6 months, 7 months without beating a top 30 team. Like, the only top 30 team they beat was like Godsend maybe twice and Liquid in a best of one. I walked past by their practice room when the tournament was on and I see two people sleeping in their chairs. Sleeping in their chairs. I don't know if the practice was over or not, but it doesn't really matter, right?
Didn't notice at all. But...
And I'm sitting there like, why? Like, who is paying for this? Like, Complexity is a partnership team with ESL and Blast.
See, so the obvious shock there would be when they made the lineup, Kassad, they were like, I bet everyone will be sleeping on Complexity when it comes.
Looks like Complexity is the one sleeping.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
The thing is, like, they are partnership with, like, ESL and Blast. They have a future as an organization. Yeah. They have future, the safe future, right? You're going to be playing those events every year. You're in the North American region, right? And the road to the major is going to be much easier than the European cutthroat one, where there's like CS combined with Europe. It's like crazy competitive. In North America, it's much easier. You know, you have these spots in Pro League and Blast and everything. And you assign people who have no experience, knowledge, education in organizing, in being a GM into this. You are keeping JKS on the bench for a year now, paying him, well, let's say his salary was 30,000, 50% goes to the bench, so 15,000 a year, 15,000 a month for what, a year? What's that, 180K? Into the fucking dust, right? So what are you doing? If I'm the CEO, I'm asking this guy, listen, before I hire him, listen, come up to me with a 5-year plan.
Yes.
5-10-year plan, because 10 years is a little bit longer, but let's say 5-year plan. With my, I have partnerships with ESL, I have partnerships with Blast. Come up to me with a 5-year plan, see how you're going to organize my team, how you're going to, you know, build the contracts, how you're going to build the team, everything to the point, and then see if we can do something, you know, to make it happen and how much money we have and all these things that comes up with it. They just gambled. They got 5 players combined with that. What was that lineup that they bought players from?
Exosalt.
Exosalt. They got them into there. They got Junior, poor guy. The guy's not playing well for 6 months. All right. I mean, everybody's like on his ass. Like, you know, he's under a lot of pressure. He's not playing well. Fire him. trade him, send him somewhere else, whatever, put him into the academy team, make a, you know, have an academy project that's proven to be successful for some wars. Like, there is a ways to do things, right? They're just sitting there for 6 months doing absolutely nothing, waiting for the player break, and now God knows what's going to happen. Meanwhile, they're still paying JKS every month to be sitting on the bench. At some point, you just bring him back into the lineup and try with him.
Yeah, exactly.
They had Dexter sitting right there as an opener, right? He didn't want to move. Maybe that's not their you know, culture of NA, but maybe it is. Maybe you can make an exception there. But he was there. Let's go back even before this lineup into the Juggernaut lineup. So Jason Lake goes to Blame F, gives him a bag of money. Right, he goes to Config, gives him a bag of money. Goes to JKS, gives him a bag of money. Right, the JKS buyout was $500,000. You know, the salaries. Everybody knows what the salaries are. Right, so he goes there, he spends all this money, and he allows two out of three players to go for free to Astralis. That's Config, and that's BlameF. Right, and the third player that he gave another bag of money is sitting on the bench getting paid whatever the money is, right? Let's say 15,000, right? So what are we doing? Meanwhile, there is, like, I see people like saying, like, these organizations are always losing money. That's why you are losing money, because you have incompetent people, you're hiring incompetent people to do the job they don't know how to do, right? So start from top to bottom. Right. Don't buy a player first just because he has good numbers. Let's see, like, hire a person who has knowledge, experience, education, and everything that he needs to know to actually build your plan for the next 5-6 years. Because you are, again, partner with TSL and Blast, and you have a future in this, you know, French semi-franchise leagues. Right. You paid your way in, or whatever the thing was. Right. But you are there. So they're doing all these things wrong. EG is not much better. They're going to lose Breeze. They're going to lose Cirque in, 2 months? The contracts are expiring based on that article, right? So all this money, they were on more than $30,000, that's for sure, right, in the salary, when it comes to salary. A year ago, you can see that this lineup is going nowhere. Over a year ago, that's like, let's say, 15 months. At that point, if I am the GM, if I am the vice president of whatever the freaking title is, right, in charge of the CSGO project, I say, okay, I don't see this guy Cirque or Breeze in my organization anymore, right, in the future. He has 18 months. I don't see him here. I'm going to trade him. You want to go to Valorant? I'll speak to your agent. I reach out to the organizations. I reach out to the other teams. I talk to Complexity. I'll talk to Liquid. I'll talk to Cloud9. I'll talk to all these North American teams if you want to be in North America, you know, and see where can I put you to get rid of you off my books so I don't have to pay so much money. And then I'm going to hire a coaching staff that's going to be consistent of many different people, many non-traditional esports kind of, you know, structure. Where, why don't we use some of the money to pay the coach to be the offensive coordinator, like in NFL? That somebody is going to be working with the IGL and the head coach only on the T sides, right? Can we use some of the money that we wasted on this particular thing to hire somebody who's going to help our T-side, you know, being better in defaults, being better in team play, post plans, everything that comes to T-side. And then you hire a CT-side guy, and he works with the head coach, and then you have the coaching staff. Instead of hiring some analysts who are going to go and on Twitter and say how Stewie did this and that, and then how did you hire that guy? Who did that job? I told EG at the beginning of the year, obviously I have nothing against Malek. Malek is a great guy. He's a good coach. He's very strategical and very methodical, and, you know, he has his way. But he doesn't know NA. He doesn't know NA culture. He doesn't know NA
players.
To me,
that was an obvious culture clash you were going to have. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I told them that in January.
Yeah.
There was a culture clash. There was the personality clash between him and Stewie. Stewie is a fiery, emotional guy. You know, he has his shortcomings. He has his strengths, right? Malek is a different type of coach, right? He has his shortcomings. He has his strengths. Obviously, it didn't work. They made the call. They had 6 months of just basically being dead last on every event they played. They beat nobody. And now they're restructuring. I like the fact they brought in Valence. Valence has experience in being a coach. He is a very intelligent guy with a lot of education as well. Maybe he can make something happen, but this move with the two academy teams, I don't know what that is. But the point is, like, organizations like Complexity, now you can look at Fnatic. What the hell is Fnatic doing? Like, they lost their identity completely. They were a Swedish powerhouse, right? Everybody who thought Fnatic was a, you know, Swedish team, always strong, always contender, no matter, like, if you underestimate them, they're always going to be good, right? Right now, they have no face. They have no identity. They have nothing. They have Messi, who is an extraordinary player, you know, who is the one that they should build their team around him, right, if they can. But they're doing absolutely nothing. Now they're just, like, swinging through players. They don't know what the hell is happening, right? There is more examples, but Complexity is probably the one. Like, things are being done backwards. And that's why their people are losing money. Start hiring people that are smarter than you in these areas, that are more experienced, more educated, that can do these things for you. Get a five-year plan. How you're going to build this, how you're going to execute that, and see if this fits with your vision. And then go into searching other coaching staff, and then into searching players, and then building what you actually wrote down on the piece of fucking paper, right? Instead of just going and just randomly picking players, hoping you're going to win the lottery and play the fucking quarterfinals of IEM Cologne. And then, you know, at the end of the season, look at MAU Sports. You know, look at MAU Sports. They're probably going to stick with this lineup, which is an obvious mistake. They played a season that was terrible, and they had a good run, some good wins in Cologne. Is that enough to buy you another 6 months? If you keep this lineup, you are blind. There is obvious problems in the lineup. And MAU Sports is one of the organizations with a partnership, with a Louvre agreement, you know, with a championship mentality and culture that goes 20 years in, you know, back, right? So, do you want to be the team that's going to be satisfied with the quarterfinals? No. You want to be the team that's going to be going for the finals. And then you need to sort these things out. The same thing goes for Astralis. Man, they built such a big legacy right now, and they're ruining it.
Like, yeah.
Coming out with a statement that there won't be any changes, like, please. Like, what's happening?
Right. I think two things that I really picked up on from all of this. One, you already outlined it, and I think that this is something that probably should be integrated into esports contracts, is the kind of like the NFL style of not entirely guaranteed contracts that needs to be, that should be coming out, because like they need to be able, there needs to be more flexibility in terms of this. I, like, for example, I've heard through the grapevine Stewie's contract is guaranteed with EG, essentially. Even if he gets benched, even if he's off the team, it's an amount of money that he's going to be paid regardless of anything that happens with his status on it. Those kind of contracts are just toxic in terms of what they do to the organization and how much of a stranglehold these players have over those orgs just because they're there. And so and I think that's kind of why some of these orgs are probably in the positions that they're in, because it's just like they just invested way too much money into these people, into these players, and kind of the player. There was kind of like, you know, the NBA had that player empowerment period, which we're kind of in right now. I think the same thing kind of happened to CSGO as well, where people started getting paid way too much. The salaries, everything started getting inflated in terms of where people had. Like, basically, the guarantees just are such a bad idea, and we're seeing the repercussions of that for so many different organizations happening simultaneously right now. Second thing is that, Kassad, you've given so many great alternatives. Honestly, you should. If someone doesn't just hire you as a GM at this point, they're doing themselves a disservice.
The thing is, like, there is so many things, like, the guaranteed salary, like I said, it needs to be 75%, right? You pay them less money than you would pay them initially. Instead of 30,000, you pay them 20,000, but you give them 75% safe money, right, in case they get cut, right? So they feel the financial security. You can ease yourself on the books, and the budget will be bigger for you to hire additional coaching staff. Do you know how much players will improve if you have an offensive coordinator, like working with a team on only T side? Like, he can go individually into this any specific role, so he can take the load. I can delegate as a head coach to him, right, and take it like, listen, I want you to focus right now in the next 2 weeks on the next bootcamp. Anti Ecos are really not working for us. And let's see what happens on this T side. It's your job. You're a T side coordinator, and let's bring the ideas to me, and we're going to fix it, and we're going to implement it into the game. The same thing goes for the CT side. We have the problems with the anchor side, CT side, a Mirage utility, right? The flashes are not coming in on the right timing. I'm going to dedicate and delegate my coaching staff to that person and say, listen, these flashes are not fine. Are we losing smokes very early on? Let's find a solution. Bring me the ideas. Meanwhile, I, as a head coach, get into this like ideas of strats. I resolve the problems between the communication of the players, which always there are always problems in communication with players, with the orgs. The manager is there, their team manager is there to actually make sure that he is a bridge between the GM and the whoever is like in the management and the players itself, so players can, you know, focus more on their you know, game. So everything is kind of in a system that fits together and works, you know, as a fucking clock. So right now it's all in a mess, and I don't see, unless people smarten out fast, I don't see like this going on for so long. Lots of orcs are gonna just bail out at the end and just, you know, stop wasting money, even though it's their own freaking fault.
Did you have another point there, Maristick? Was that only the first point you did?
No. I got mine. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Basically, I would say this, like, the actual bigger picture that Cassard's making, the paradigm shift, it is the idea that the GM looks not at the next tournament, not the next month. The point is, that's what the coach looks at. The coach is the one who has to win the next match. The players have to win the next match. Like, the GM is supposed to be looking at the whole future of your org, essentially. Because that's one thing I can't handle. There's two parts to it. One is that they don't have any plan going in. Any, even the best dogs in the world have no plan. Their plan is this, Maristick. Like, who can we get now that's really good? That's it. That's the end of the plan. And then you go get them if you can. Like, that's it. Because what's crazy about this is, I'll give you an example. When I've actually done consulting, so I'll give you one example Pete might know, is when I did it with Guild, because they actually purposely asked it to be public so that they could sort of get like a marketing shine off the idea they had someone legit, you know, like, when I've done it with people like that, but I've also done it behind the scenes with companies. That's exactly how I do it, Cassard. What I basically tell them is this: tell me the total budget of the project for players, right? How much like can we buy the team for or buy players for? And then what I want to know is, how many years is that supposed to last? Like, is that supposed to last me 3 years? Do I have to be like top 10 still in 3 years? Or is that like a year? Is that like a year and a half? Do I get more in 2 years? And so what you do is, from your starting point, I can already tell you what you're going to do for the next 3 or 4 years. So for example, I told certain orgs, if you're only going to give me, say, $2 million, you think that's loads of money. That's nothing. $2 million is like, I'm probably going to have to buy a team that I'm gambling now, it's like 20th, and I'm gambling it could maybe go top 10 if things go perfect and like two players get better. So you can gamble with 2 million, or you can give me 5 million, I'll go buy your top 5 team today that's top 5 and will be top 5 still. But that's 5 million, it goes from 2 to 5. And then they ask the classic question, what's in between? I said, death is what's in between, mate. Because in between is where every other fucking org is going in CSGO. They don't go, I'll pay for the guaranteed top team. They don't go, I'll pay the minimum to gamble on a team that could be all right. They go right in the middle and they spend like $3 million and they don't buy like the best star player. They're like an all right one. It was like the fifth best on the list. By the way, this is how Cloud9 was basically made. If people don't know, I always say the biggest travesty of the Cloud9 story is just that you fans don't know behind the scenes the lists of names Henry started with. If you knew the people he wanted originally, those were amazing fucking teams. Those would have been like some of the best teams in the world. They were even some of the best players in the world. The problem is everyone said no, or they asked for the world in terms of the buyout. And at the end, this is the mistake Henry made, really, was at the end he should have sort of been like, actually, I shouldn't do this project. It's not the players I wanted. Like, I'm sort of like, I'm basically going to get judged, but not on the what my project is. I'm sort of just at the end buying not as good players, but for way too much money. Which, by the way, that's just an extreme version of what the problem the whole CSGO space is in. They keep doing that with teams. So I have to say, if I was building a team, dude, I would really, as the GM, be doing stuff like this. Even if I had, like, the best example is what he said there, Mark, about FaZe. Even if you're FaZe Clan and you win most tournaments, you should be planning now for who replaces Rain in a year or 2 years. Like, for example, say, I'll give you a mad example. Say your example was you want Valde, right? Even if FaZe is number one now, you keep in contact with Valde and his agent the whole time. You find out when does his contract end, like what's going on with his other deals. You keep a shortlist for everyone. If people don't know, by the way, in my opinion, the greatest coach ever, I actually think, is Bill Belichick of the New England Patriots. And this is why. Because what he's a genius at, I'm not joking, is even if he has the best player in a role, he knows I can't keep the guy forever. So, A, when, what do I start looking for as warning signs? I'm going to have to remove him. By the way, this motherfucker cut Randy Moss. Like, this guy is a fucking G on a level you guys don't understand. If anyone else has Randy Moss, by the way, if you don't understand the reference, that's a play. You just keep that guy till he retires if you're a normal club, because he's like so popular, so good. But this guy was so gangster, he knew, like, even he has to be let go eventually if he's not the right player. So in my opinion, that's the problem in CS as well, is people are just following their own tail. They just go like, oh well, because, like, you know my joke there, I made it as a joke, Mary Stick, but it's sort of true. The way you know TL has fucked up their GMing is the joke is now they really should on their shortlist number one for riflers should be, can we get a guy called Twists from FaZe? Well, you already had him, you morons. Like, that's how you know you fucked up the GMing, didn't you? Similarly, by the way, just as a final point, I'd touch on this. Think how many of these orgs, Kassar, didn't have a game plan. And so, as you say, they didn't even get value for the players they had. Like, the idea of complexity, just let's config and blame F's contracts run out and then just stand up, take off the call jersey for $0 and walk over to Astralis. Like, what are you doing, bro? Like, when can I get blame F for free? Hi, I'm going to start an org tomorrow. Can I have blame F for free? Oh, I have to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars now. No shit, because he's one of the best players in the world, you moron. Even if you don't get him in your team, that could have been like $300,000 4 months before he left that you could have spent on the player that now replaces him. Similarly, if you're Fnatic, right, when you sell Brolan, that's how I know you have no game plan. You can sell Brolan. If he wants to leave, sell him, right? But the money that you sell him for, instantly, I'm buying names. So the problem there is, Kassar, I can't be having nobody's coming in. Roy can't be the name. Like, I told them, your names should be like fucking JKS. You should be bringing back a big name that you're going to build around, and that's what you use the money for. These are, and the last one I'd say would be this. The EG one is the most criminal of all, because in my opinion, just the fact they signed off on that five-man lineup tells me whatever the fucking GM status in EG is, that person needs to be the first person fired, mate. Because whoever signed their name underneath that should have a consequence. Dude, that's one of the only lineups, the only two I can think of in recent memory, is EG and Imperial, where every expert in all of CSGO said these lineups are terrible from day one. Nobody came out like, this could be really good. Everyone was sort of like, I don't even know why they're making these teams, basically. Like, that, if everyone's telling you that, there's a bad sign, guys.
You have to be ruthless if you want to be successful in this thing. Like, you mentioned Randy Moss and, like, Bill Belichick using the prime of his players, understanding the moment where he needs to let them go to get another one, right? That is what complexity needed to do with Blame F and Config. 14 months. When he was like 14 months left in his contract, I sit down with him and says, listen, I want to keep you in my team for the next 3 years after your contract expires. So I'm offering you a 3-year deal right now. We're going to start negotiating. It's going to last for 2 months, these negotiations, until we reach an agreement or we don't reach an agreement, which will leave us with a year of your freaking contract, right? And said, so you say, like, you don't like the terms of the next 3 years after that, or you want to go to Astralis because you got a better offer? Fine. Okay. Then Astralis is going to pay me your freaking buyout, right? And I'm going to get my money back and I'm going to invest that in some other player. That's going to be there is no honor system there. There is no like, yeah, I'm going to sign. And then when the time comes, like, maybe next month, let's talk about it in June. And then he goes for free, right? And then you look like an absolute clown. And that goes with two players. And the third player is sitting on the bench, not being sold. And that's not your fault. That's the fault of the person you hired to do that job for you. So once you hire them, you have an extra player in your roster that you need to get rid of, that you need to make money so you can pay whatever you need to pay for the next season, right? Put it into the budget, whatever, right? So I'm using my JKS, who is sitting on the bench, and I'm offering him left and right, talking to him, talking to his agent, everybody, like, making a perfect deal to sell him to get my money back and just invest it into the future of this team, right? That's what GMs do. And they constantly, like you said, think about the bigger picture. They don't think about, is my team going to go through the groups in the Cologne? Or what's going to happen in the next Pro League or the next major cycle? I have a plan in my head that's going to last for 5 years. And then if you come to me and ask me, you want to be my, I'm going to tell you, listen, if you want me, you're going to have to pay this much money to me. And then you're going to tell me, what's your budget and what is it that you want to accomplish? I can guarantee you that for this much money or for this, that you can, that you have, like partnerships and budget and everything, I can guarantee you this type of success 100%. Like in the case of Complexity, EG, G2, Fnatic, all these teams that they have these partnership spots and actually they have the finances to do it, right? The one that kind of fucked up was FPX. I don't know what happened there. These guys were just completely, you know, out of... They landed from Mars into the esports scene, into the Counter-Strike, and they fucked up everything. That's a different story. I just wanted to mention it. But the thing is, if you want a success, you need to pay, and you need to like have something to offer, and let's see what we can do, right?
Oof. Okay.
Go to your ugly point then, Maui.
Yeah, sure. Mine's a little bit more one-dimensional. It's just that... when I look at the Brazilian landscape right now and I think about Rio projecting ahead to the future, I have a hard time imagining that any Brazilian fans are going to be rewarded with their Brazilian teams making it to the playoffs, basically.
Did laugh when I saw that ESL already announced that Fallen will be there for a show match, just because that's the only way you can guarantee that Fallen will be there. In a way, I love esports because they're so cynical, aren't they? Like, they just knew that's the only way you can guarantee he gets through the RMR, so just invite him anywhere for the show match.
Even though he's an active competitive player, obviously. But I look at the Brazilian teams right now, and the ones that the most obvious one that has a chance to make playoffs, obviously, is Furia. But they have just been, I mean, at the end of this, but right before this player break happened, they were just tanking. I don't know everything that was going on with them, but at Valencia, they came in dead last, and at Cologne, they put up a better fight at Cologne, but they still lost to Liquid, which is a team that
that's what people have missed about Cologne, is, you know, when everyone complains, like, who beat anyone, they're all shit, because people like Furia fucked up the bracket.
Group
was supposed to be the Furia group, was it? It was supposed to be FaZe versus Furia, and then instead Astralis and TL, the ones that get out, so you blame Furia for that, not the fucking other teams.
Right, exactly. I mean, so you have you have a couple. I mean, the other team that I think actually could rise up is 0-0 Nation, actually. I think that team has like the best chance to show that they have some upward mobility. Not that I think that they're going to make playoffs of a major, but it's just that they might give some people something to be happy about in terms of, I think they could probably make the legend stage. I don't think they'll make it through it, but you know, they'll be like a 1-3 legend stage team. But the main thing is that I've heard a lot about Brazilian crowds. I've heard a lot in terms of like how their fandom works and everything like that. And if that arena doesn't have one Brazilian team going somewhere in that tournament, it's tough to believe that the turnout or anything is going to be that good, because they're also going to be in the arena broadcasting in Portuguese to all the fans there. So you think that they kind of have a more singular fandom in who they're going to be rooting for. I don't know. I maybe you guys could jump in on what the fandom is like there.
No, on that part, though, if you remember, I told you there was a past episode where I was told by some people, this is actually from the Antwerp Major, I was told basically that that's part of the reason why, like, for example, I'll give you the best example ever. Someone like Astralis, to you and me, well, Astralis is Danish. No, teams like Astralis apparently do have people who are within the Brazilian scene.
Who've
made, like, fan clubs for, like, Brazilian fans. That's part of why, if you notice, at every event, they all, like, kiss the ass of the Brazilian fans all the time. Part of it's because then, in theory, when you're in the stadium, they cheer for you. Like, I will say, if you notice, as much as to me it's alien, because I always remember Carrigan getting wrecked by the SK teams, Carrigan actually is mega popular with Brazilian fans. Have you noticed? Like, he has loads of fucking Brazilian fans, if you ever look, and they all go to the stadium. So there might be an angle that can make it work that way. Like, put it this way, if you haven't guessed Maui's name, that will be the ultimate shill major of all time, where every single org's going to be like, we love you, Brazil, just saying it all in Portuguese.
It's been happening for
past years. It will be.
When it comes to Brazilians, there is the only successful team that can ever be right now, I mean, in the nearest future, I'd say it like that, is the team with Keserato and Yuri.
Yes, of course.
Those two players, they need to be in a team with better teammates, like with better players, like not teammates, like, you know what I mean. So organizing a team like that would be the priority number one. They're stuck in this Twilight Zone contract with Furia that they're either happy, not happy, 7 year, I don't know what the hell is going on there, right? And they're stuck there pretending to be happy or something. I don't know. But the thing is, like, we have prime Keserato, top 10 player in the world in my opinion. And we have Yuri, who is an absolute beast too, right? Those two players, they deserve to be in a championship contender
absolutely
team. You know, is it going to be Brazilian, you know, full or just a Brazilian core international team with a couple of Brazilians? I don't care. Like, if I'm EG, I go for those two. If I'm Complexity, I go for those. If I'm freaking Fnatic, I go for those two. You know, try to build something around that, right? Because those two players are absolute monsters, right? So they're just rotting in that, wasting their prime in that team right now. That is always going to be the team that's going to, like Janko said it always, that they're going to be the team that were supposed to win the title and then lose it themselves.
Yes.
So they're in the past 3 years, they have been playing the same, right? They're a danger. They're threatening everyone. They're always like, you know, a dangerous team to face. Everybody wants to avoid them, but they are never considered a team as a favorite to win the title. So it's time for them to make the change. I want to see these two players either combined with, you know, some of the young Brazilian talents, like, for example, the Dumau guy. You know, he's pretty talented as well. So, and obviously, I still, even though Cold Zera, I mentioned him before, right? And I think he didn't adapt the way he should have in the 2018, 19, and so on. I still think that he still has it. He still has, like, what it takes to be a top-tier player. But I don't know if he's willing to adapt, and he's going to adapt in this team of 0-0 Nation, right? So for a Brazilians, like I said, it's just those two players come to my mind at the first, like UK Serato, Yuri, and then, you know, see what you can do with that.
No, I'm with you on that. Like, to me, they're like basically Legion, Naf, and Liquid. It's like, these two players should be on a better squad than this. Like, it's why you build around them. It's just neither of these teams are built around them particularly well. No, the problem I've always had with Fury is basically, it's as you said, basically, Cassad. The real problem is this. Fans have done the thing they did with Ents. Because the team in the server gets really good, you forget all the, like, business things about the org. So what people are forgetting is, they're acting like, because Fury was the number one, like, Brazilian team in the server, that the org was the biggest, right? The real problem Brazilian CS has had for the last 3 or 4 years is that it was the MIBR guys like Fallen, like Cold Zero, like Fur, who had all the status and actually could actually, like, potentially make teams, but then they didn't know any of the young talent, so they couldn't go and get the Dumaus of the world before they became good. Instead, they just saw Furia, and whereas, like, you know that analogy I gave earlier, before there was contracts, you just go to Que Serato, like that famous picture after the first DCS where Furia did the run, and there's just that picture with Fallen in the bar with all those Furia guys. The joke is, in the old days, that wouldn't just be a picture, that would be them joining fucking his team. Like, the next tournament, they'd go home on IRC, and magically they'd have all left the channel, and then the coach guy would be like, they've left the team, bro. Like, you'd never even find out, they wouldn't even tell this guy. That's how it used to run, like, 10 years ago. The problem is, in the modern day, I'll just tell you this, I've heard when MIBR tried to sign one of those players, Cassad, that, like, he called them up on the phone, and he was just crying on the phone, like, no, actually, I don't want to go, actually, which is like, you wonder, like, what's going, like, that, the joke there, it's like my joke about Na'Vi back in the day was simple. It's like, does someone have an AK-47 off camera pointing at this guy, like, make the call? Like, what's going on here? Like, that's not sports. You know what I mean? That's not sports. Like, yeah, if he doesn't want to go, fine. But if he does, like, I don't want this scenario where people are just, like, trapped in a 5-year contract. They can't go anywhere. And you because the problem in that scenario is, no one has this conversation. Who does make the player choices in that team? Do the players? Do they have any agency? Can they leave? No one really knows.
Nobody That's knows anything. Part.
Yeah.
Hey, it's crazy. And it's not just Fury, it's all the organizations. That's the part of the big problem that I keep saying. Like, there is no structure in it. It's just guessing game, right? It's just a lot. You may as well take your $500,000 that you're going to pay for your whatever player, go to casino and place it on freaking red, right? And see what happens. Like, it's the same thing. Organize yourself, people. You know, get these organizations to structure their departments properly, right? And see from top to bottom and make your plan for 5 years stretch.
Yes.
And you will see things look better for you. You will attract more players because they will recognize the system that it's working. They will recognize the environment that's healthy. They will not be sitting in their homes thinking, is his teammate plotting against him to have him kicked because he played a bad Dust 2 against Astralis, right? That is happening today.
Oh,
people are talking on Steam, you know, this guy is playing, maybe we should get this guy. I'm going to go to my CEO and I'm going to ask for this. Who the fuck are you? Your job is to play, all right? Play. follow the system, be in the system, respect the whole process and the organization. You're getting paid for that. You're not getting paid to pick your coaches, to pick your teammates. You're getting paid to play. And simple as that.
Exactly. Right, we'll move on. The last point of all is going to be my ugly point. And I actually think, even though you're going to think this is a played out topic, it isn't, because I put it in the ugly category. The problem with this topic is this, Maui. Everyone else would only ever put it in bad, or they would think I would put it in good. But I'm purposely going to put in best of five, final, ugly. Now, the reason I say ugly, crucially, is because I think I've nailed it, dude. I've been thinking about this topic for so long, because people might know I'm one of the people who suggested best of fives. I even told ESL you should do this. I will add the disclaimer I have always said that ESL did not fucking listen to, which is I didn't say add best of five to every LAN. I said add it to, like, kind of each St. Cologne and the Major, you can't. But sadly, they had to add it to every LAN, of course. So now they've ruined it. So now then everyone will be like, you like best of five? Yeah, not all of them. Not shit ones. So here's why it's an ugly point. Because here's how I would describe best of five finals in CS. If it's a bad one, it's going to ruin the whole final. But if it's a great one, it will be the best match you have ever watched. And so that's why it's a really tough spot, because here's the problem. I know why it sucks to do the bad one. I even know if you're a player, it sucks to play in some of these, right? But the problem I have is this. I think about the feeling you had at the end of that IEM Cologne final. Like, no best of three could have given you that, like, experience. You couldn't have had the same, like for example, what's mad is, I actually had the analogy I always give, Kassad, is actually the UFC. Because in the UFC, if people don't know, you know they only have five rounds for the title fight or the main event. And the reason they do that is because actually, nobody can go, like, 100%, like, stamina rate for five rounds. You can't. So the reason they made it for the champion is because they even call those the championship rounds, round four and five. Because essentially, like, if you're a lesser fighter, you just gas out then. You won't be able to win the fight. So what it means is it's like the ultimate test. Like, if you're really going to be the champion, we're not just going to make it so you can sort of fluke it. You have to, like, go to war with this motherfucker. I had the same vibe at the end of that final, dude. I was like, mate, if I even lost that final, that's like a fucking blessing to even be able to play in a match like that in your career. Like, that will be remembered as, like, one of the all-time classics, like, in history, mate. So that's the problem I have with this scenario. I know there's downsides. I know there's negatives people don't like. But every now and then when it delivers like that, it is fucking amazing.
Yeah, I mean, how many times are we going to get the final
true.
Like this?
That's true.
I can remember maybe only one, that Fnatic phase in Kato, right? Where Flusha had that 1v5, you know, on train.
Yeah, yeah.
But those are the type of the finals that kind of delivered. But and this one, and that's it. For me, I'm not really a big fan of best of fives. You know, it just... I get the point that you're making. Like, if you want to win this grand fucking tournament against the best team, you need to go to war with them into five maps. There is no fluking. There is no, like, winning a couple of anti-ecos and like maybe you get the double pistol and so all of a sudden you're one map up and, you know, and you somehow win. But I'm not the biggest fan of the whole thing. I always preferred best of threes just because, like, keeps the consistency of the whole event. It's like, for me, when I'm a viewer, obviously I enjoy best of three more rather than the best of five. It's kind of more draining. And, you know, as a player, it's just, even the best of threes are absolutely...
Oh, of course, yeah.
Mind-blowingly draining, like, to your physical and mental stamina.
Oh, you know when fans say that stupid thing when they go like, oh, it sounds like you're just working a normal job. It's like, you don't have to fucking just think straight for 3 hours. Like, don't, no. Do not blink and make a mistake. Like, that's not fucking normal work, boys. That's really hard. It's draining, like he says.
Dude, as a coach, like, you stand in a best of three behind the team that goes like a, let's say, tier one CS, right? You play full best of three. You just stand there, you talk through your four freaking timeouts, 30 seconds and the half times and the between the maps, and I feel like I lost a fucking 2 pounds, right? And my brain just is completely melted. I can't wait to go to my room and just, you know, reset for another day. But I can't even imagine for the players that are actually playing all those rounds, you know. It has to be, like, more focused, you know, than actual coach or, you know, anybody else who is behind you, right? So all these things in a best of three are difficult enough. In a best of five, it's just next level of just add to the factor that full arena and the fucking crowd and, you know, you are the underdog and first time in the arena or whatever the fuck is happening, right? So it's a... It has ups and downs. It has like positives and negatives when it comes to best of five finals. I think you nailed it pretty good when you said like when you have a good one, it's a very memorable. When you have a bad one, it kind of sucks. Yeah. So yeah, I think that's pretty much spot on.
It kind of ruined like the Dallas finals, for example.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So many finals.
One competitive map, and then the other two were just like, all right, let's just get this over with. The other one that I think sticks with me at Epicenter 2017 between SK and VP. That was like an all-time great BO5 for me, viewing experience-wise. But the thing with BO5s is that I like actually when it goes to map like 4, because usually if there's no back and forth, it really does just sucks. Like, I mean, that's even 3-0, but it's like close maps, I actually don't even necessarily find myself enjoying it that much. It's kind of like it's one of those things where you do look back at it, and sometimes there are narratives that are lost where it's like, oh, it's a 3-0, it's convincing, or it's like, it was never even close. But sometimes 3-0s can have 3 close maps.
I mean, kind of 8-0 this year was pretty close.
Yeah, it can be. It can be, but it just gets lost in history a little bit more when that happens. Whereas
it's memorable, it's not that memorable. The thing is, like, we played the IEM Beijing 2009. That was the second last LAN before the COVID hit. So the first event is the 100 Thieves against Astralis in the finals, 16-14 first map, and they stomped us in the second and the third, and that final was garbage for the viewers, to be honest. We finished the final, we didn't even feel like it was the final, except for that first map, and it was like, yeah, whatever, let's go home.
I was talking actually in the green room about this to some people, and I think that this just breaks Counter-Strike too much, but it's basically the fact that BO5, I think the whole day lasted roughly 8 hours of CS, and that is just incredibly long, and as a viewing experience, I can't sit and watch anything really for 8 hours. Like, I had to move around the arena a lot. Like, I was moving into lounges, I was moving into the green room, I was moving around the crowd, like, I was just doing different stuff, because I just, like, sitting, and then I imagine what it's been like when I've tried to watch a BO5 on my computer at home, and it's like, I need to just walk around my room a lot. Like, 8 hours in one place. I've watched, like, a lot of, like, long films that are 3.5 hours, but I can't... It's really tough to do that, like, for any longer at all. And I think traditional sports knows that at this point. The thing is... So the proposed change I had for people was that if it didn't break CS, it'd be cool if you could do a BO5 that's like MR9 or MR12.
No.
The thing is, I think it breaks the game way too much. So I wouldn't, but it's just like, it's just impossible to expect people
Here's the thing, let me take that point a sec, because I can give you an example of what you're talking about isn't as ridiculous as you think. Like, basically, if people don't know, that's actually what they did in Quake. If you don't know, in Quake 3, a duel lasted 15 minutes for a 1v1 game. And what they did is, in Quake Live, they made it 10 minutes. And that meant instead of doing a best of 3, you could do a best of 5. So what it meant was, the reason in Quake it worked is because even though the time limit's less, it means you play more maps. So you get more like variety in the series, you see who's the better player. So here's the thing. Maybe you could make that work for the MR angle, like you say, like maybe the best of 5 in MR12 is like less rounds, more playable, it doesn't have to take 8 hours. That might not be a bad compromise. That might not be a terrible one.
For me, that's I'm not agreeing with the best MR12, simply because the pistols and the ecos and like the economy has so much big role in it. But just imagine this: let's play MR12, but there is no money. And there is no pistol rounds. You just buy whatever you want.
That would be interesting. Yeah.
Every round. Yeah. So you have full utility, full guns, whatever. And you play the gun rounds from 0-0 till you reach 13, right? And MR12, whatever. So would that work? Yeah. I think it would.
I think that would be really interesting. Yeah. You see the full strength of the team.
I would just make it MR9 like that then.
You eliminate the randomness of pistol rounds where people are gambling. And, you know, no matter how much of your pistol strat is advanced, if team is stacking 3 people on the side, doesn't really matter, right? Unless you play some sort of super slow default, but that's another thing, right? But the thing is, like, the randomness of the pistols are just too big of a factor. If you eliminate money, there is no economy, losing, winning bonus, you just buy M4s, armors, grenades, and you play with 5 AKs and, you know, 5 ops, whatever the fuck you want to do, right? CTT side. Let's see who is the better team. Let's see who has the better strats, who has the better structure, who doesn't really want to depend on the deagle shots on the eco round, like in avoiding the pistol rounds and getting the six rounds of that, right? Because you force in the second, you don't win that one, then you are eco, and then you are 3-0, you lose the second pistol, the same thing, you lose six rounds like that. But let's play full gun rounds all the time. Let's see who is the better team like that on MR12. That would shorten the matches and eliminate some of the interesting factors of the game, but also it would add to a lot of things.
It would just help the pacing of the whole day if it actually went all five maps, because 8 hour, I mean, I don't think anybody can truly enjoy and full focus an 8 hour product of anything, just personally.
Yeah, it's I mean, people are just, like you said, you just watch something for an hour and a half.
You just want
to do something else. You just, you know, only in America they have like 5 hour games for everything, but yeah.